for your conscience, for us all politically, spiritually, and indeed on the ground earning a living. Having said that, I want to look at the agenda. I'm sorry, it seemed that one of the secretariat was so friendly with the NRCS, they put them down twice. So now we've corrected the agenda to feature only the first item on the agenda, and then coming to the company's tribunal. So on that note, we're looking at the apologies. It would appear that if we have we've got an apology for Honourable Elvis, who indicated he's running late. I've got an unusual apology, which, while it was given from by some Honourable Quirrell, has not been expressed earlier or anything in writing, and therefore is a matter of concern. But if it was in writing and sent to me, just indicate when you emailed it, because I didn't get the chance to go into the email. I'm sorry.
It was not in writing, it was in writing to Andre, just to say that I unfortunately must attend something at 12:30, so if I can be excused around 12 o'clock, it's only 30 minutes that I will be busy and then I'll be back. But unfortunate that was just jumped on me last week.
Yes, I think what I'm really saying is, if it can go, normally from myself I would have heard from the ANC first of all. I did hear from Yorwood, and I just got a little note here from Mr. Hermans. Okay. Those are the only two apologies. Honourable Whip, do you have any apologies? Right. Yourself, then? Thank you. Okay, Mr. Medina, we're going to go straight into the adoption of the agenda. We have somebody to propose the adoption, saying the Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Hill Luce. And now we're going to have the presentation by the NRCS. My apologies to you for not in keeping you waiting, but kind of evicting you from the old assembly. Do go ahead. Just one moment. On my left, who has yourself first? Thanks, Honourable.
Thanks, Chairperson. I just want to bring to your attention, and I need to be guided by you in this matter. I sent a letter to you on the 14th of April, and Mr. Hermans was also copied in on it, regarding the National Empowerment Fund and five questions that I deem that the National Empowerment Fund needs to answer, and my recommendation that the CEO come to the committee to answer those questions. Unfortunately, I haven't received an acknowledgement of the email from either yourself or Mr. Herman, and I just need to understand from yourself, what is your preferred matter of, preferred way of correspondence? Because, you know, I'm just battling to, you know, have sort of urgent issues like this addressed. Thank you.
Well, what you've done is quite right, and it's not a question of them not being responded to. There was a reference to that issue last week, I think it was, before I left, that the outstanding question that members had sent in, either that day or earlier, should be expedited. Yes?
Chairperson, let me just give you some clarity. It's not regarding that matter. It's regarding a matter of a business support tool that the NES had decided to cut, and I'm sure you're aware of that. And it was specific questions relating to that, and I believe that we needed to have a special engagement with NES because it is such an important tool for people wanting to develop business ideas. So it was on that basis that I wrote to you requesting the contents of that letter to be dealt with, and I haven't had a response or engagement on that basis. And so I don't know if I'm engaging with you in the correct platform or how I should be so I can get a response to correspondence.
I do remember the correspondence, that's what I'm saying. But at the time, I thought it was in relation to expenditure and the cost thereof, because it's very clear to me that it had been cut due to cost measures, the fact that they had not yet been capitalised. So, and that is very much dealing with expenditure and what is available to assist them with. So that was our approach to the matter. And did indicate that I wanted a response thereof. But before I take your question, let me see if Mr. Hermans tackled it differently, because that's what I thought it was.
Worried about that, Jefferson, and I would like to ask that we
give serious thought to asking the GIPC and the department back here as a matter of some urgency to find out what is going on. But we can't exercise oversight through the media and through prior allegations. That's not the job of this committee. We should be, the department should be playing open cards with us, especially when they are before the committee just 4 days ago.
We'll recall that we had asked the minister to come back on that, but he was away at the time. I'm talking about the SIP fee now, okay, on that particular matter. So it's not true that we simply waited for the paper. We were aware, you as well as me, as well as every member of this committee, of our oversight in January. We were very well aware that there were challenges there. But for us, we were aware of that, and we in fact tackled it in the committee when we got back, and we made it clear that we would ask what the situation was. The update was that it's gone to the CCMA, and as I said, just 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it was confirmed that this was the case, in fact, by SIPC last week, that this matter was reaching a conclusion. So I'm not going to respond there as a dialogue because I want to take the ANC, who'd also like to speak. So, as I've said, it is for you to say you were not aware. It's a total aberration of the letter we got from Nahar. Honourable Kalako?
I would agree that we, of course, we were, most of us were shocked by what appears on the papers, especially after we've had deliberations on the matter here in the committee. I think what we will request, I would agree with the honorable members when they say, I think the CIPC must come back and give us in full, honest information of what happened, what is the issue, so that we can be able as a committee to take an informed position and decision. Yet as a committee, we have not expressed ourselves our decision and position except through the investigation of what we have faced before us, except seeing what is we think we don't agree with as a practice which was done. But I think it's going to be important that they must come back and engage with us on the matter. I also am not satisfied at all on the channel of events that they are not at the present moment.
Yes, I want to just clarify this with yourself, Honourable, that before we move to Honourable Nkongi, you're referring to C and not the company's tribunal. Honourable Nkongi?
No, no, thank you very much, Chairman. I think we were very sharp last week with this, and we did agree mainly with that presentation. And in my memory, we agreed that we need a full report, but we did not say they must come back. Now, if there is a new proposal that is coming there, that they must have, with that, when we said they must give a full report, we did agree with the way they are doing it. And you could see the motion of the parliament last week. But if now there is a new proposal, which is an addition to the proposal that we made before, the full report, because we would not agree with that. So now what can appear in the newspaper is a confirmation of our concern last week about the operation of office. So I would agree and support that we call them with a matter of urgency. But they must give that report to us a week before she does. Because I'm wondering about if the report that arrives on Monday and then we receive them here. And it's not actually some of these institutions to do that because they don't want us to prepare in time. So our request is that we receive this report a week before and then we can study them and come to the committee to prepare. Thank you very much.
The reason I'm saying that is because we don't some time ago with two issues, and I say some time ago, not yesterday, not last week, all right? Ray, put your hand down, please, on the main. But we dealt with two issues. The 16 is one issue. Alright? Let's get this clear. And that, of course, is the reference of the paper today is for the commissioner in that, Ms. Astrid Luton. The other issue we dealt with, which has a relationship, the entity, with subsidy, is the company tribunal, which the Honourable Hilder brought to the attention of the committee. They're not correct, Honourable Hilder. And the reason I want to see the two separated in some sense is because if they are two separate structures, with two different heads, boards, etc., but they have a relationship, okay? Company tribunal and the company's intellectual property commission, that's what it's called. So when we are speaking, be clear as to who we're calling back and what we're calling back, because the issue remains the same with subsidy. The deputy commissioner indicated that the CCMA report, that they were due to give us a progress report on that in 2 weeks. He made that position last week to us. So what we need to do is to get that report, because it is linked to what we're saying on the SIP fee. It does preclude, I can see that, I'm not taking them, I'm finishing. So you may put them down. May put them down. Not a gym class. So the issue is simply that if I say, I find it disconcerting, you see, because I'm going to put my hand up at the drop of the hat, that in respect of subsidy, we explain that the minister was away. He is still away. He's in Indonesia as far as I am aware. If he wasn't in Indonesia, we would have called him here. In fact, we did call us for the meeting as though he would be overseas. Now, that will give us an overview of all of these entities, not just the subsidy. There are a number of entities we're having challenges with that we want the department and the minister to respond to. But others may not be in a position, because we can never forget that in the final analysis, the minister is the executive leader here in the end. So I want to separate that issue. Now that we have finished on subsidy, because we are going to take a position on that, we've heard from both sides, and in fact the position hasn't changed from last week. I want, before we deal with companies' tribunal, to indicate that we will take a position on the company's tribunal after we've heard what they've got to say about their budget. And not prematurely. They are listening. They hear. And there are quite a few issues in relation to what you raised, Honourable Governors, and what will we hope to hear in the budget. I hope I'm clear on that. So I don't want us to deal with the company's tribunal at this moment in time. This is where we are, and then I'll take those who have the objection to what I'm saying. We are going to make members aware of the responses we have received on the budget at the end of today's meeting. One, two, anything that they believe may not have been requested or were not requested exactly at the time of the budget, we will give them that correspondence or email. And finally, I want to indicate that from what you were saying, Honourable Whip, Honourable Calato, you were saying that you believe that the executive head, the minister, should return to the committee and respond on these issues. And Honourable Nkongi was indicating clearly we don't want to receive any written material the day before. At least 3 days before. Would that be sufficient? 3 days before. Right. Now I will take himself, Colonel Hildreth, that would disagree with that position.
Thank you very much, ma'am. It's not so much a disagreement as a point of clarity. When we visited the CIPC at our meeting last week, we discussed the dispute with the Hawu. That seems to be a relation of a separate matter to the forensic report into the conduct of the chairperson, which has now come out in the media in the last 2 days. That was not discussed in our oversight of this, and it's not discussed last week, ma'am. So you were incorrect to say that you've known about this for a long time. The first time I heard about the forensic report was yesterday in the media. And this is my point of contention. It's not for this committee to conduct oversight by hearing about things, supply applications, and media reports when the CIPC was before us 4 days before this. So I appreciate the support from the police. I agree the CIPC must come back and answer about this along with the minister, and we'd like to see that report, and we'd like to know about these things before they become front page stories, because that's our job.
I take your point, Honourable Lulu, but if you look at the documents Naha gave us, which we say they should have followed a proper route he gave to us. Everyone did agree on that. But those, unfortunately, having got these documents in our own hands, I have no doubt every member looked at them. I know that. And then they refer to an investigation on the commissioner. They refer to that. So, you know, it's not that we weren't aware. We took a deliberate and conscious decision that we would let the harm route go into court, and we will then re-examine it. Fine. Honourable McPherson?
Thanks, Chair. And I think an important point that this committee should take a stand on regarding issues such as this is that clearly the DTI was aware of the forensic report. They sought to bring it to our attention into the NGD, but they had not seen fit to bring it to our attention until we actually found out. And I think that we need to take a principled stand that the CIPC was here last week, as was Ms. Scholes, and we should have been informed there and then that there was a forensic report. But that information was withheld from us, and I think that we need to take a stand that should not be allowed to happen in the future, and we cannot be brought forensic reports on a selected basis into selected intent.
One of the top ones there in certain industries, making sure companies, the lotteries, the intellectual, the standards, all of that work. Lynn, on her right, is Miss Jodie Scott. She makes sure that everything in that whole trailer industry is working properly. Chief Operations Officer, I think that's what it's called. Then she's got all these helpers. But then on my left, you've got some people call us the important people. We're actually not that important. We're just like yourselves, but older. And we're members of Parliament. That's the DA here. That's Democrat Alliance. And then we have the African National Congress sitting over there. Yes, okay. So that's who we are. These are people who do the work and make sure I don't make too many mistakes because I do. Right. Now, members, we're on to the national LBOK. I'm looking at yourselves on my left. I think we can move at this point. We are coming back to you for closure on the documentation, and we're also coming back on the company's tribunal. Right, I see that school worker for dollar toi. What is formally toi? I don't think what. Fondelaketwa, thank you. Alright. So we're going to hand over immediately to yourselves, and thank you for your patience. Right.
Thank you, good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. Just a brief introduction to those who are with me here today. We have our Deputy CEO, Mark Rivera, who's next to CFO of Reshma Mathula, our Fiscal Strategy Manager, Mr. Edward Temba. Sanjay Ivachan, General Manager, Automotive, Nathan Katz, General Manager, Foods and Associates Industry, and Mr. Pomani Kandile, the General Manager, Electrotechnical. I think the Chairperson will be introduced the members from this year. So we will do the presentation on the National Regulator for Compost Specifications. We will do a little bit of background, a strategic overview of the NRCS, specifically with regard to the mission. The legislative mandate, the values, the legislative changes that we have experienced thus far, overview of our strategic goals, our value chain, and our performance information thereafter. And once I'm finished with that, the CFO will take us through financial information for the period under review. So our vision, we see ourselves to be aspiring to obtain the credible and respected regulatory policy specifications and fair trade. And our mission is to protect South Africans by developing robust compulsory specifications and technical regulations, and also maximizing compliance with our enforcement task. So we derive our mandate from the following acts: the National Regulator for Compulsory Specification Act of Ohio of 2008, the Legal Metrology Act that was promulgated last year, November 2014, the National Building Regulation and Building Status Act, 103 of 1977. And just to say that this act, it will be going under a review process in the near future. And the Food Stuff Sustainable and Distribution Act, number 54, 1972. So the industry sectors that we function in, automotive, we look at various different automotive products. We have listed all the components and products here, but you can have it, vehicle replacement components, and then the concept of manufacturers, imports, and builders. In the chemicals, materials, and mechanicals sector, we look at various different products, chemicals, cement, detergents, protective clothing, protective equipment, safety shoes, and so forth. Just to say that on campus, we do have an information booklet, which we will distribute, and it has a lot more information on the products and the sectors that we are involved with. In the electrotechnical sector, all those appliances that have an electrical circuit or that utilizes energy, we're involved in that sector. Food associated industries, at the moment we look at fish and fishery products, canned meat, and we are in the process of looking at processed meats as well. With regard to legal methodology, it deals with the verification and approval of measuring instruments and then fair trade, which is really that you should take the measure that you are paying for and that is published or displayed on the package. In terms of the building regulations, the job of the National Building Regulator is to see to the uniform interpretation and implementation of the National Building Regulations. generally do this by following the lock-in-lock-out principle. That means we lock out those products that will not comply with the technical regulations and specifications of these products considered to be unsafe, and by doing so, we lock in those products that are compliant and that will be safe for consumers to utilize. We create fair regulatory environments that enable strong investments, and this environment is created by partnerships of various different entities, including the Bureau of Standards, the Department of Health, the Department of Agriculture, and also with the industry participants and the public themselves. We are also involved in national and continental and international forums where we promote the issues of South Africa, the SADC, and also the African Union as well. Our values are professionalism, where we have independence with integrity without fear or favor. We are innovative, we try to be as innovative as possible to respond to the changing needs and the dynamic market conditions. Engagement and collaboration, as far as is practically possible, we engage and collaborate with all the different role-playing stakeholders. We are inculcating a very high-performance culture where the potential of all employees is used to maximum and where we are able to render efficient and effective service. And also, we are in the process of informing all our stakeholders of the NRCS, the work that it does, and the impact that it has on the areas of individual consumers. Both strategy and enablers. So, during the course of the existence of the NRCS, we found that it's become more effective to keep non-compliant products out of the marketplace, obviously before it enters the market. And the point at which we can keep products that are non-compliant from being traded in the environment into the marketplace before it enters is at the point of source manufacture. The point of source is two, have been identified as being two places in our economy. One is where the product is actually manufactured or built in the country, or where it is brought into the country through one of the ports of entry. This is known as source. Inspection is the source of the product, and we concentrate quite a bit of efforts, a lot of efforts in the source of the products. And that's all the intent to lock up non-compliant products before you enter trade and to ensure that we aren't more efficient in regulating the markets. And then we also, there will be products that slip through the source, the bottom point of entry or manufacturing or building processes. So we have another component of surveillance and retail and distribution points where we go and do inspections. We take products for inspection and sampling. This is called retail and distribution inspections. So in doing our work, we attempt to intelligently use the information that's available to us, especially information technology and supervision processes that are available to us. I mentioned earlier that we collaborate with our partners, products and revenue services. At the moment, we are working very closely with the product and revenue services to utilize their risk engine to keep out non-compliant products from the marketplace. We work very closely with the product and Bureau of Standards and to develop the necessary technical regulations and specifications to regulate products in the marketplace. Departments of Food Forestry, Department of Agriculture, National Consumer Commission, because we are both closely involved in protection of consumers, so we work very closely with the National Consumer Commission, as I said, Department of Health, Fire and Police Services, assist us with our enforcement activities. Home Investment is now the lead department in the Board Management Agency. We work closely with them as well. So I mentioned that we work very closely with Department of Revenue Services, and this is to profile the products that are coming through the cost entry in order to be as effective as possible to keep out non-compliant products on the marketplace, and also profiling assist us from reducing the delay that would normally have been experienced and trying to inspect a variety of containers that come to the ports. Members will know that there's approximately 20,000 containers coming to the German harbor on almost a daily basis, and around 5,000 to Port Elizabeth and Cape Town. So it's quite a large number of containers, and profiling assists us in reducing the delay that would normally have been experienced. We utilize the available intelligence that is there, that's the bill of lading, the management shipping methods, and information that is provided to us by importers and the applicants. So, in the last year, we had an amendment to the legislation. We moved from trade metrology, which was the old act that was regulating fair trade, to legal metrology. The difference between trade metrology and legal metrology is that trade metrology dealt with trade instruments only, whereas legal metrology widens the scope to couple of members from Nepal that was the Legal Policy Act was being in the process of being brought from our years. A number of engagements we had with this committee to think through the Legal Methodology Act through the process of Parliament. To give a few an overview of our strategic goals, so this is a bit small. We have four strategic goals that we derive from the mandate of the NRCS through the NRCS Act. The first being to develop, maintain, and administer our specifications and technical regulations. I mentioned earlier that we do this in consultation with our partners, society and bureau standards, departments like Department of Health and Agriculture, and also with various different participants from the industry and the public. And then after the compulsory specifications and technical regulations have been approved and passed, we then go through a process of maximizing compliance with the specification, which is normally called enforcement. And at the moment, we're using a combination of inspection resource and inspections at the marketplace to maximize enforcement compliance with the technical regulations and specifications. We also undertake to inform and educate our stakeholders about the RCS through various different platforms. We are currently in the process, or we have already engaged with GCIS to undertake some of this on our behalf. And of course, our final strategic priority is to ensure that we have an optimally capacitated institution that can effectively and efficiently carry out its mandate. Our value chain, I won't go through this in much detail because we have presented this previously. As you can see, I'm looking at the middle line, the orange colored boxes in between the two red arrows, where we have the development of DCs. Then we go to approval and homologation, which is really your list of policy and your inspector and your application for approval or homologation. Homologation really is to look at the makeup of vehicles and to determine whether they should be approved or not. Once that has been done, then we go through a process of surveillance, which is inspections. Inspections include taking samples of products, sending them for testing, and then should the testing results prove that they shouldn't be allowed, they should be stated in the marketplace, there will be an element of sanctioning that takes place. All of this is underpinned by the support services, which is HR, Information Technology Administration, Marketing and Finance. And of course, through all of that, we need a strategic approach, we need budget, and there must be a governance mechanism in place which we've implemented for the organization. Our performance information for the year in the year 2015-16, we intend to develop multiple specifications and technical regulations, either first-time review. We intend to produce two technical papers, and with regard to the National Building Regulator, we intend that from the day we receive an appeal from an applicant to the day that the building report issues a report, there will be a period of 90 days. Just to skip on the stand on this 1 minute, the National Building Regulator is one of the many roles that play in the environment as should a person, an applicant, make an application to a municipality for a building design, architectural design, the municipality refuses or rejects that application, then that applicant has the right or has the possibility of applying to the NRCS for the National Building, for the NDR review board to consider that application and to determine whether in fact the decision by the municipality is correct or whether it should be looked at differently. In order to maximize compliance with specifications and technical regulations, this is our enforcement activity or market surveillance. We have undertaken previously that the approvals will be done with 120 days of sleep, and we are now looking at doing the approval process a little differently because we understand from various engagements with role players and even the honorable members that not all applicants will fit the same risk profile, so we start with the risk profiling, first of the product and of the applicants themselves, and then we look at components that are subject to further processing because there's a quality process that is implemented when components are subject to further processing, and we look at the probability of local manufacturers and companies where we are able to go and verify the safety or the processing system, the manufacturing process, to ensure that the products that come up from the process in fact comply with the technical specifications and regulations. Type approval measurements, these are scales, measuring instruments such as scales. These are processed with 120 days because of the very onerous nature of testing scales and measuring instruments, and the alien equipment will not be processed within 21 days. Food and associated products, we have undertaken our annual performance plan projected that we will inspect 100% of all declared productions and consignments. Now, these rates go to local, locally produced products for local consumption, as well as for exportation, as well as those import products that would be the case for us for trading in our marketplace, we would split, and of course, all of them with regard to our specifications and technical regulations. It's anticipated that we will conduct 30,000 such inspections for the 2015-16 financial year. In addition to the food and associated industries, we have the electrotechnical, the chemicals, mechanical materials, we have legal consulting, and we have automotive. In total, in those four areas, we anticipate that we'll do 19,189 inspections for the year, approximately 20,000, and it's broken down as it was 3,200 for the automotive industry, that is the source inspections, 800 retail inspections. In the CMM, chemical materials and mechanical sector, there will be 3,360 source. Source is divided, as I mentioned earlier, into manufacturing and building concerns within the country as well as possible entry into the country. There will be 2,240 retail inspections. That includes the inspections we do with regard to plastic bags as well. We have been mandated by the Department of Environment to also look at compliance of plastic bags with the specifications, and we include that in our retail inspections as well, and we take it backwards to source. 2,640 source inspections for the electrotechnical industries with 1,763 paper inspections, and in the legal and policy domain, we plan to do 4,151 source inspections and 1,038 retail inspections. With regard to our strategic goal 3, which is to inform and educate our stakeholders about the national regulator, we target that there will be a 5% increase in awareness of the MRCS over the next 3 years. We have targeted the internal and for external electronic publications per year, 2 multimedia campaigns each over the next 3 years, and 9 consumer education events or campaigns per year. In terms of our strategic goal number 4 is to ensure an optimally capacitated institution. With regard to our vacancy rate, we have targeted that our vacancy rate will reduce 8% in the 2015-16 financial year, and thereafter be reduced 7% over the next 3 years. Of course, I mean it should be a 0%, but honorable members would understand that we do have a turnover of staff like any other institution, and we try to keep the turnover as minimum as possible. We also have moved towards being a learning organization, so developing our staff capacity is of high importance to us. We've increased from 120 employees we trained to 130 over the 3 years of the NCF, and this is in relation to a staff complement of about 315 that we have at the moment. With regards to our IT system, we plan to have our system availability increase from 96% to 99% over 3 years. And we do have a comprehensive plan, IT plan, with regard to moving the NRCS into technologically into the future. The ICT plan is of course included in the strategic plan for the NRCS as well. With regard to financial information, Chairperson and honorable members, I will hand over to the CFO, Ms. Madhura, to take us through the financial information for the NCF. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Moodley, our Chief Executive Officer of National Regulation and Compulsory Services. Okay. Thank you. This is really just a snapshot of financial information. Financial years 12, 13, and 14 being actual audited figures. 2015 financial year being the revised budget estimate. 2015 being the start of the NCF period with 17-18 as forecast in line with the Treasury regulation. Ladies, in terms of revenue, NRCS generates revenue from two major sources. First is levies. Levies essentially are the commodities that we regulate. We levy them in accordance with the volumes that are manufactured and imported against the tariffs that are presented by the minister. We then also generate service revenue from the work that we do in the form of the approvals. Other income is a combination of interest and cash reserves that are released. I'll explain that in detail just now. And then the transfers is about the funding that we receive from the ETI National Treasury. And the last question is broken down into the two major classes of employee expenditure and goods and services, and then the non-cash item of depreciation. Then in analyzing revenue, our revenue growth is fairly consistent over the entire period. I'd like to draw your attention to more mostly in terms of revenues grow fairly consistently, that leads up as the blue line. Services as well, fairly consistent growth with services. If you're looking at town service fee, which is the purple line, NRCS received notification from Treasury this year that there will be a reduction in the mainline funding for the organization. The reduction in 2015 scheme year to the amount of $24 million, and the reduction in the 2016-17 year is to the effect of $36 million. More indication has been given on reduction in the 2017-18 financial year, so we retain the forecast figure as originally indicated by Treasury. In order to supplement the reduction in the core funding, NRCS has released cash from its reserves to fund the shortfall. And our revenue growth, all in all, is fairly consistent other than reduction in the core funding. Then on the expenditure analysis, we basically show you two expenditure analyses. The first one is the expenditure for the strategic goal. On this slide, we basically give an indication of where our biggest spending areas are. The dark blue line reflects the administration goal as is required by Treasury. Goal one is purple goal, that is our VC development and our NR division. Goal two is really our enforcement and our market surveillance. That's where most of our work happens. 60% of our budget actually resides in that area. Strategic goal three is our marketing and communications, as was already indicated, and 2% of our budget lies there. Goal four is our support services, HR, IT, finance, and approximately 15% of our budget lies in that. There is an indication of a goal five in 2011-12 financial year. That is where we had had five strategic goals. That goal has now been collapsed into the corporate services goal with effect from 2013. And then we also look at expenditure per big expenditure items. Compensation of the employees in the 2014-16 year comprises 72% of the total expenditure, and the amount is $254 million. Goods and services comprise 27% and the amount of $97 million, with depreciation comprising the remaining amount. And our surplus and deficit position, attention to this slide is intended to show you in line with Treasury budgets and the surplus, but in light of the fact that there has been a reduction in cost funding, had NRCS not been in a position to supplement that reduction with cash reserves, we would have been in a deficit situation for 2016 and 2017 financial year, and really that's all that's showing. So the $24 million in 2016 and the $36 million in 2017 is a reflection of that decline in core funding. We also felt it prudent to update the committee on our progress in respect of the Auditor General's findings. Our most difficult finding, if I may say so, is the qualification on revenue. And our peers had some total of 6 qualifications last year, 2 in the revenue environment. The major issues in respect of revenue were in respect of cut-off and completeness. On the area of cut-off, basically our learning periods do not coincide with the accounting periods of the organization. Since NRCS moved from that, the new legislation was amended and the old practices continued to collect revenue from January to December and not in line with financial year, which is April to March. So we had a qualification in that regard last year. And then also in respect of completeness, This is where the Auditor General said there must be levy for non-exchange revenue. Maybe don't receive any in exchange for levy. I mean, I have been issued to know what our market is because we inspect, we conduct surveillance. They then compared our surveillance records against our collection records and found that we were inspecting certain companies but not collecting levy. And due to the volume of information, we were not in a position to become out quickly after year end. Also, the fact that our levy model is based on the volume declared. If we don't have a volume declared, we're not in a position to raise revenue. So, in respect of the cut-off, NRCS has successfully, through the minister, presented quarterly levy return period, which requires industry to submit levy returns on a quarterly basis. The last quarter, which is March, which coincides with the financial year, hopefully that will allow us to now deal with this qualification. We managed to send out all of the levy forms successfully during this quarter. In addition to that, we've changed internal processes to be able to account for the quarterly declaration. We've amended our system, we've redesigned our levy return form, we've also redeployed capacity to deal with this cut-off issue. Then in respect of completeness, we went through a manual exercise of comparing all our inspection records and our approval records against JDE for 2014 and for 2015 financial year. We then requested support from our operational business unit, which they have done, to actually follow up on all the outstanding levy returns. The challenge with levy returns and SSI levy model is we can't raise a revenue item until we've received a levy form, because we can't estimate a volume from an industry, from an importer or manufacturer. We've also gone to the extent of now sending out letters to compel levy payers to actually submit their levy form. So a lot of work has been done. As much as all of this work has been done, we have also attempted to analyze the root cause of some of the levy issues. And essentially what this slide attempts to do is show you the complexity around dealing with the revenue qualification in respect of levies. I'm going to start on the right-hand side. We've identified that there are a number of VCs, compulsory qualification, that we're not regulating and consequently not collecting revenue on. Already that is a challenge for us. We also currently don't collect revenue on all the VAT marketing holders that are potential levy payers. Our levy model is inherently risky. The fact that it is based on volumes manufactured and imported is virtually impossible without a levy return to make an estimate, a reasonable estimate as to what a manufacturer import can be for a quarter, because it's cyclical, it depends on the commodity, it depends on market performance, a number of factors that contribute to that. We then, in our follow-up with industries that our operations department helps us with, we found that we are dealing with very difficult industries from time to time, where we do not receive information back that is requested. It must be on the regulator. We do have companies, organizations that are defiant and in non-submission of returns. And that ultimately contributes to us not having sufficient information on which to base our revenue on. Then our legislation, when NRCS moves away from Euro standard, became a standalone entity. Original regulation did allow for many mechanisms that were not brought forward into the current legislation. Currently, NRCS is dependent on courts to implement fines and penalties on non-compliant taxpayers. We don't have those mechanisms given to us with NRCS. Interest is only applicable on unpaid accounts after a long period of time. So our legislation needs to be relooked at to give us more power as a regulator to actually compel many payers to submit information that will allow us to account our revenue completely, but also to enable us to regulate more effectively. We also have an integrated instances there are systems within certain business units, but they're not integrated. So the reconciliation is really an onerous manual process, which from time to time can be fraught. This is relying on people at the end of the day. We also don't know all of our markets. We know most of our markets, but there are entrants in our market that don't comply and we're not aware of. And that ultimately results in not knowing all the revenue that we should be collecting. And then finally, internally, our processes need to be refined to ensure that there is seamless integration between the financial aspects and the operational aspects of our business. Having said all of that, we have made progress. We have submitted the quarterly levy declaration, as I've indicated. We've already implemented some changes on our financial systems. We're in the process of finalizing the specification, the approval for the specification of our ERP. Essentially, the organization has acknowledged that we need to do certain changes in our financial system. We are in the process of initiating a project in respect of the online submission of levy returns. That way we can track our industry better. We are finalizing the specification for a levy audit function. Essentially, this will allow us, where there are non-compliant industry members, for us to actually go out there and audit them far back to 5 years. That much our act doesn't allow us to.
Before you move on, back to aspect, it's a clause is not levies per se. What is this clause in the legislation? The legislation on the NRCS, which enables you to raise the levies. Just give some.
Can I say in? May I go, please? Thank you. Then in terms of the integration between JD and our CRM environment, as I indicated, a lot of our business are still manual. So we have intermittent manual controls and want to do this reconciliation, and reconciliations for 2014 and 2015 financial years have actually been completed. And then establishing the new payers that have not been paying, that has been completed as of the prior and for the current financial year. As we speak, our inspectors are following up on outstanding levy returns. As I indicated, we need 100% of the levy returns back. Then our qualification that NRCS had last year. We had a qualification on payroll. This was predominantly due to the fact that the Auditor General could not credit back some of the calculations of the budget supporting documents. The Auditor General subsequently qualified not just payroll, but they qualified all of the provisions and the accruals associated with the payroll provision. I'm pleased to say that the Auditor General has audited all the calculations that have been done by management, and they are now complete with the 2014 recalculation. Our policies and processes have been updated. We are in the process of finalizing appointments to our head of HR and our HR manager. We're at a very advanced stage on that. We're also in the process of implementing HR management system. The file plan, which is the primary core of the original findings, has now been completed. The audit of the HR files have also been completed, and letters of confirmation have been issued to people where there were changes in salaries, and the files have been updated accordingly. Relevant recalculations have been completed for the 2014 financial year. We are in progress of finalizing the 2014 calculation. So for HR, we have made significant progress on this one. Thank you.
Right. Now we appreciate that clarification. you'll find that most people know what the AG is. But when it comes to the rest, what I know that you yourself, Mr. Moodley, will probably find you don't recognize everyone here again. It's always useful to give us the complete breakdown. I think you had explained some of the breakdowns at the end on the last page, one of the pages you have here. And then the JDE.
JD Edwards Financial System. Very clearly, JD Edwards Financial System.
I ask people to put their hands up how many knew that. Please remember acronyms. We do sell them out online. It makes it that much easier. But thank you very much for that, you know, the presentation that you've given us. We really do appreciate it, Mr. Moodley. So let's go immediately to the members of the committee. Let's try and keep it sharp, 2 minutes max. Honourable Williams, Honourable McPherson, Honourable Cromwell. Honourable,
I thought I had.
Yes. Honourable Morgan Congi and Honourable Kalakwood. Let's start. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've just got 3 questions. On your SG2, which is about penalties and compliance, I'd like to know, are the penalties effective? In other words, then, do you think they're tough enough? Are they working? Or do non-compliers just pay the fine and continue with the same approach? Secondly, I just want to know, does the structure that NRLC has inspect goods for export? In other words, then, we're trying to move to a manufacturing country that exports our goods, and do you inspect export goods with the specifications of the destination countries? And lastly, I just want to know about, is your goods and services budget, what percentage of that budget is spent on external consultants, and why can't these jobs be done in-house? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable William, yes. Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to deal with, firstly, the budget, and I'll get into a technical issue. With regards to the budget as a whole, I see that there is increase in an incremental period, which, you know, obviously forecasts that more and more people are utilizing the NRCS, which means that more and more people are complying, which is certainly good. However, transfers received is, I can't quite understand that the digital food current financial year, you're at 109 million. You then, obviously, because of the treasury cuts, you're losing a bit of money to 91 million, then it continues to go down, but then it jumps up to 128 million rand. Can I understand why that is? And if that is in relation to the 70 million rand increase in compensation of employees from 2014-2015 budget to 2017-2018. It seems quite extraordinary, but what's even more extraordinary is the huge jump from 2014-2015 of roughly 40 million rand. I'd like to know, what are the positions being filled, and what salary scales are the positions, what grades are those? Then, just to a technical point, Mr. Moodley knows quite well that I've engaged him on the matters keeping up the LOA process, and he was very kind to assist someone who's on the verge of losing a very big business deal. But I will. Thank you. But I don't see anything in relation to actually, you know, improving your system. And I think that when we were last year on oversight, there was some 2,000 applications backlog. And I just thought, what is that backlog today? And what progress is being made in modernizing your systems to allow such as the ERA process to be speeded up so that it does not hinder businesses and tax action aid in the execution of their duties? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable McPherson. Yes, Honourable Clinton.
Thank you, Chairperson. Oliver McPherson asked a question about the big jump in the compensation of employees, so if we can have clarity on that. And in this explanation, when you look at the slide, surplus deficit, in 2015 there's a surplus without cash. You can just explain that to me. On the other slide, it appears that you will still have a surplus, but it shows that there is a negative with regard to that. You can just explain that.
Thank you very much. Yes, the question.
No, thank you very much, Mr. President. No, my first question is on the strategic goal number 2. I think it's on slide 19. When you say that the NRCS would process approvals within 120 days from the date of the state, and also type approvals for measuring improvements would process within 120 days. I have want you to give me an insight based on the processes of application and completion of the process. Why it seems so long? 120 days, if you can try to give me an insight on that. The second question is on the strategic goal number 3 of increasing awareness of the LRPS trend and function by 5% each year. What is the percentage which can justify the 5% increase each year? The last question is on strategic goal number 4, building the backup of the organization with the level systems to support the network. So your percentage is very high right now, the target is 80% for 2016. And you have raised the matter of or the matter of that you start raising those and then you have the capacity to get implement effective all your money. Now your target 8% 2016 financial year, it should reduce 7% over 3 years. Now I want to understand what involves that decision. Of 1%. If I look at 1% each year in the 3 years, over the overall period. So I'm very concerned about that.
Thank you. Honorable Tommy, Honorable Colombo.
Thank you, Chair. That's two good questions. One, on your slide where you deal with compliance. You say you inspect, you said including borders. Does that mean including airports and harbors? Or is it only border fees? Secondly, what is your staff confidence? And also, can you be specific on what are the goods and services? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Colombo. I want to just say I was really appreciated, smoothly. You were able to relate your MITS strategy to the strategic objectives of ETI, particularly IPAC, which is, of course, what we try to drive at. The other issue, which I hope other entities will follow suit, is to identify the enablers that we need to work with all along the way. And once again, you have identified them, and of course the trick here is once they are identified, you can see how effectively you do utilize them and you are aware of them and so on. Having said that though, there's the issue along levy. Which yourself, you pointed to on the other side that the Auditor General has taken you to task over these and you are now implementing another system. And you may need to just expand on how what that progress is and any glitches that you may have identified. What I would like to do is, or you to answer is, how do you calculate the levies to be paid by industry? What is that calculation? And secondly, are levies paid on all locally manufactured goods, including those destined for export? If that is the case, what is the rationale for this? If the goods need to comply with different standards in the destination countries, how do we reconcile that? and rationalize it. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moodley.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and honourable members for those questions. I have the team here will take some of the questions. Just to give an indication, with regard to the financial questions, the CFO will take it, except the question that was raised on the renovation cost increases. Levies will be dealt by the CFO. Speeding up the ROI request process, I touched on it a little bit, but I will ask Ms. Candela to give us more information on that. And that will also relate to the 120-day process application. Ms. Candela will deal with the extra levels, and I will probably supplement that in terms of the midway measuring instruments. With regard to the staff complement and the turnover, I'll ask the ECO to give us that, as well as the strategy in terms of the market awareness. We have the same system we have done. The risk and strategy manager and the DCO can just give us that information. And of course, the calculation of the CFO was here. So to start with the answering of questions, Chairperson, I just would like to answer the question on the increase in the compensation. So the increase in the compensation is twofold. One is, of course, collective increase in terms of getting the new staff members in. As the CFO indicated, we have a head of human services, we have a head of HR, we have a post level 5 salary package related to that post level, approximately 800,000 grand per year, so that will generate the figure that is budget for compensation. However, we explained to Chairperson last year and the year before that NRCS, as you are aware, has had significant labor unrest in the organization over the last 2 or 3 years. So latest lastly from certain settlement agreements or certain demands requested by organized labor that related to creating of posts as well as the position of the colleagues at the NRCS that emanated from the celebration of the NRCS 5 years, 6 years ago. So it took us approximately 4 years to go through those processes, and last year we stepped on it, which resulted in the implementation of those grading reports, which brought the salaries of the staff members to their colleague levels. I just want to say that grading exercises were undertaken by joints, and they used the phenomenal system, so it wasn't an internal process, and therefore we were quite satisfied that the grading was conducted independently, and it reflected the true market levels of salaries that we should have been paying to the colleagues. There was also some CDMA decision that we granted with regard to the tool of tree allowance, as well as our approach to the pension payments, which we had to correct, and that also resulted in the increase in the staff costs. However, that would be instead of those ones that we had to deal with in 2013, 14, and 15. Therefore, as if you look at the propositions, the projection for the next, the remainder of the NCF year more or less balances itself out in terms of the revenue that is there. Just to give a little information on the 120-day period, in terms of the field of methodology, that's the measuring instruments. We receive an application on we receive the application for the measuring instruments, and then this is called cycle approval. What happens is that a sample of the measuring instrument, the first scale from an example, is brought into the NRCS together with application forms and so forth. And then we will have to determine whether the scale in fact complies with all the requirements. That means, can it correctly measure the amount of quantity of goods that is produced, putting to the scale over a period of time, over a number of years. So the testing that is done is over a period of time. For example, the scale would be interested to know if you take the 1 kilogram weight on a certain portion of the scale, and if you take the same 1 kilogram weight and put it on the other portion, the scale must still weigh 1 kilogram. So it's quite a lengthy process of a whole lot of tests that has to be performed before we can actually certify that that scale is now ready for use. But what happens is that we approve, we type approve, means that we approve the prototype of the scale. So that all scales that are manufactured according to those specifications, they would comply. So it's a very lengthy process that requires a lot of testing, and therefore 120-day period is required. Some of them require drop tests and other tests, so it is a very, very intense process. All of this is intended to ensure that the consumer is not shortchanged at the end of the day. It is sometimes probably attractive to shorten some of the processes so that we give these applications back quickly. But if we don't do the work fully, we don't test fully, we may be giving an incorrect decision which will have some serious negative consequences in the future. So that is why some of the tests that regard to the LOA, the letter of approval, letter of authority of applications that are in the upcoming technical environment, that is a different concept with, I think, Mr. Kenny and Mr. Jacobs to get that as well. So what I'm going to ask is Matura to answer some of the finance questions, the DC or the HR and the marketing questions, and thereafter I'll hand over to Mr. Kenny. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'll start on slide 25. The question with regard to why did the council go up in the 2017-18 year? The indication from Treasury is that the reduction in baseline only for those 2 years. They, in the letter to us, confirmed for now that we may budget in line with this figure. There might be a potential reduction at some stage going forward, but for now that is the figure Treasury has provided to us. So we budgeted in line with that. Then moving to slide 27, question on goods and services. Goods and services comprise everything that is not depreciation, interest, and employee costs. So we're seeing the things like the useful stuff in there, your repair and maintenance, testing that we do, travel, accommodation, because a lot of the selling goods we do is out of the borders. We do have quite a sizable travel budget. The training of your employees, etc., that is included in them. There was also a vision in regard to consulting fees. Just quickly looked at our figures. So based on the actual for last year, this is unfortunate. We're sitting with actual consulting fees in the region of 1.9 million. The bulk of that is your internal audit cost, so it's very much in your support environment. You also have an amount of money that's sitting there for actual valuation of your end. We don't keep that capacity internally. It's really just brought in for specific projects. So in relation to the total goods and services budget, you're looking at 0.5% expenditure and consultancy. Obviously, we do have costs to serve through something, but that's not core consultancy as such. And then the next question was on slide 28 in respect of the surplus that is now reflected as a deficit in 2016-17. As I indicated, all of this was intended to do is to say that we rely heavily on the core funds that comes from DCI and National Treasury. If MFCs was not in a position to have cash to release to supplement the reduction, we would have been in that situation. So currently we're sitting on the green line. The green line is what we budgeted for, so we're about four on that. Then it comes with the question on how do we calculate levies. Levies are calculated based on the volume that is imported or manufactured. The tariff is determined by NRCA when the VCs are developed in consultation with the relevant industry. So the upfront tariff is in the compulsory specification that is developed. Annually, we consult with industry and we agree on increases to that tariff. 2 years ago, we had a 3-year agreement with industry on the CPI plus one increase as of September annually. So the power to increase it is within us, and we go to the minister and to Treasury to increase that tariff. And then in terms of the question on whether we levy export, yes we do. The Act does not differentiate the purpose of the intended production or import. If it is imported or if it is manufactured, we currently levy. So the answer is yes we do.
Yes, so I'm going to come back to that because your payment, specifically the presentation, not all the presentations have done this, but you made it very clear that you take an A-business into account, but also that your own vision and your strategy in full alignment with the EDTI and IPAP. Now, if you look at IPAP, the current position and so on, we're driving exports, we're driving manufacturing. And we know from your own presentation during the oversight, as well as here, that goods do have to pay and comply to international law. Are you saying once it's getting exported, you had an agreement with the export country that if it's been, you know, chased here and it's complied here, then it's going to comply there. So I want clarification of that, because if we're not doing that, then certainly not, we are going to propose or are going to persuade the committee that that's what we need to do. So could you just give a bit more information? The DDG is here, but she relies on, you know, you're the specialist in this field. All right, thanks.
Thank you very much, Alison. Just before I hand over to the DDG, I have a few questions about what I must skip over. To answer the Honourable Chief, but yes, in looking at the cost of entries, we do include the all the harbors I include them in Durban, Three Deep, Port Elizabeth, and Cape Town. I include it on an ongoing basis. Joint Lake International Airport, Kinshasa International Airport, and Cape Town, we have presence on a rotational basis. The other cost of entry, land cost of entry, we include it on an ad hoc basis in partnership with the South African Revenue Services and such. But we find that the 99% of our goods products that come into the country comes in through the harbors, through them, Cape Town and Boston. So we concentrate our efforts on the higher areas. Chairperson, to take that discussion a bit further. So you see, we do inspect certain products against South African standards. For instance, in the food and the associated environment, our FAI unit is the designated authority for products that are exported to China. For example, if there's telephone and white telephone and other goods and exports. So what happens is that, now China is an example, the European Union and other blocs that also rely on us. So what happens is that they will only accept those products into their country if they certificate, the health clearance certificate that's issued by our foods and associates. So we do that inspections. Then of course you would recall Chairperson and members that the South African standards and regulations are largely made by international standards and regulations. So what happens is that we work with the international organizations like OIM and so forth. We also make input into the standards and regulations that are subject to the recommended by these international organizations. And to the extent possible, then we adopt those standards for the South African environment. So when goods are manufactured in South Africa, according to the South African standards and regulations, well, not standards, but in our case, the regulations, then it has to be deemed in accordance with the South African requirements. Of course, more often than not, when it complies with the South African specifications and requirements, there is an element of acceptability internationally. And I'll give you one simple example of that, and that is the EMARC. Goods that comply with the EMARC, whether it is manufactured in Europe or elsewhere in the world, as long as we have accredited that company to comply with the EMARC, then we are compelled to recognize that mark. Of course, it doesn't take away the deep part of it, but it recognizes that their products comply with the requirements of international standard international specifications as far as the information is concerned. So we do indeed encourage that products that are manufactured that within our domain according for exports as such will be manufactured according to the technical regulation and specifications. And it's only those products that are exactly if it's not manufactured according to South African specifications and regulations, then it doesn't fall within our jurisdiction, we would not subject those goods to the EU. So, but we take a point further that it should be, I think let's know, Jefferson, let's, for our own consumption, for our own exploration, that we should engage into partnerships with other industry bodies abroad with regard to products that are manufactured in the country, and according to our investigations and technical regulations for the free flow of goods and products through to those countries. I just wanted to see if there's something that I left out. Penalties, I spoke about I'll deal with the penalties as well. At the moment, the NRCS Act doesn't give us the power to implement penalties. We can implement interest, but what happens is that the penalties are implemented by court of law. Chairperson, you will recall that the amendment in the Legal Metrology Act now made the penalties a lot more effective, a lot more harsh, but it still requires utilizing the electoral court of law. We had one instance in Bloemfontein where we had taken a legal policy matter to a court of law and there was a penalty given. And as I mentioned earlier, we are working very closely with the International Consumer Council to implement penalties where the it has been contravened. I will hand over now to the CEO to get to me.
Thank you. chaplaincy of Penitentiary Honourable Member. I'll respond to a few questions, the first one relating to staff complement. We currently have 317 positions, of which 302 are filled and 15 are vacant, and out of the 15, due to spending pressure, we are not very likely to fill them in 1 year, hence we're talking about the 3 years in terms of the percentage of vacancy rate reduction. So because as you have realized that I mean when you look at the budget, not a compensation budget, but the overall budget is one of between 16 and 17. So we're looking at mechanisms in terms of how to pay in this position over the next 3 years. So coming to that question now of the 8%, that is related, let us now say that we have certain positions that are vacant, some being funded, some not funded, and now that issue of saying how do we deal with that over the years. So the plan is to contain it within 1%, because if we go above that, we might be struggling financially in terms of getting what they want to build. Well, that takes into account your replacement cost and other costs that will be fixed. That is why we are looking at the 1% right here for 3 years. Because even if those costs might have appeared as funded currently, looking at what we have from the budget point of view, the expenditure on this one, so we have that kind of a chance. So this is the situation that we are having now, saying, how do we deal with that going forward? You still feel the position and go beyond the 70% now of your budget with personnel, or how to balance that. So that is one point. And the second point relating to strategic goal 3, on the 5% increase on the brand awareness. We conducted a survey in 2014, and the survey revealed that the brand awareness is at 26%. So the 5% now increases from that 26 in the baseline. So why are we putting a 5%? Because this is linked to budget. We are working in partnership with GCIS. We transfer money to GCIS to procure sort of slots in various radio stations and TVs to raise awareness about the NRSPS. The past 2 months there's been a lot of activity on various radio stations and TVs talking about what the NRSPS does. So that is how I've been defined as a customer.
I think that's useful, but just a note that, for example, and I think perhaps one is also wanting to include the DDG on this point. DDG Mansour, you know that the service was on TV the other day for extended time on EAA TV, explaining to them what they do. Fair enough. It could be quite constructive for the NRDA, but they haven't already had done that, for them also to try to get some unpaid for time on these TV channels, make people aware of the work that you are doing and so on. I think that's related to your brand awareness, isn't it? Yes, thank you. But I know you want to conclude now, Mr. Moody.
Thank you very much. So we have two responses, one from the secondary on the LOA, and then the last one, the specific section of that with regards to EVs, which was much more of a result. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Chair.
I would start by addressing the issue of the LOA process. In my shell, what involves is the administrative and technical activity. When it comes to administrative, our administrators, they make sure that they register the applications that they come. They check the payment and the application fees, and also make sure that all the necessary documents have been submitted and they are paid. Yeah. Once that is done, then the application is handed over to our technical team. Now the technical team will evaluate the application in terms of the document that is submitted. Here we're talking about the test reports, and we get the test reports together with the application. Now the evaluator will have to look at all the clauses that were tested on that front, whether they met the specification. So that is a lengthy process when it comes to other projects, depending on the number of tests that has to be done per contract. Also, at times there are visits that have been made to the factory to go and check if one order to another, like it takes a while to get a process that we conclude. Now, having said that, to address the issue of what we are doing to try and deal with the turnaround timeline, I think the order that I think the members of this committee and the ideas and the suggestions that are given us, and we have started looking into these methods. For instance, we have now divided the project into two, where we've got short-term solutions and medium-term solutions. When it comes to short-term solutions, we have started getting the surveillance inspector to assist the approval team. So the number of approvals has increased because we, on a rotational basis, we've got inspectors that are assisting. We've also decentralized the approvals from being done in head office to the region. So regions have started now processing some of these applications. So we started at the beginning of this month. We're thinking that a month or two from now, when we are used to it, we'll start seeing the volume increase. Also, we have approved the overtime, which will be starting next week, whereby over and above what we'll be doing during the hour, on weekends, inspectors can volunteer to make overtime and assist with the workers. Now, on the medium-term solution, this is, we hope that in 3 months we're going to be seeing a positive result, including every, is the implementation of our estate approach. We realize that not all products have the same risk. Some products have higher risk than others. So all along, we're treating this product in the same manner. So we are now changing this. Also, we're looking at the company and the country of origin, whereby some companies have a lot to lose if they produce and supply products that do not comply. So such organizations will actually be different from those which are regarded as high risk. So what we've done, we've developed a legal document where we just want them to give us an assurance that they will be responsible if anything that happens. So once that is sorted out, then we will start implementing it. Also, we discussed with the test facilities, whereby we want them to, when they issue a test report, they indicate that all the processes have been passed. You know, currently, they issue a test report, some areas have passed, some areas have not passed. But if they give us a test report, they indicate all the results that have passed, then we know that the test report that we get is for the product that complies. Then we can speed up the assessment and issue of error. So basically, we are doing those things, and also another one is the validity of the LOA. Currently, they are only three years, but for products that are at the high risk, we're going to try to increase them to 5 or even more. We hope that all these initiatives will be reached. So, thank you.
When it comes to the clause delivered up ourselves, we've got the act. I thought that it's always wise if you're going to be doing this to be familiar with the act, just, you know, the act yourself that you're making the reference to. Because I believe it does actually, it's not a clause that says limits per se, and that's why I wanted us to get that interpretation. But we'll look it up ourselves. We're not entirely happy with the one or two things. I'll come to the list in a minute myself. But the question of the tariffs, perhaps you can respond in writing to a committee before Thursday. I have a letter regarding rubber and the levy. It's rubber, isn't it? On the tires, what they made of steel today? Tire, rubber. You know, on that, right. So on that, the tires, I'd like specifically, if we are going to be encouraging exports, how do you think putting a levy on that, unless you can state categorically that where will we be exporting these tyres, there's no further charge. So we're trying to cut this down, and I know from looking at your work here that that is your goal. You're trying to work with us. And you may have just slipped up there, I don't know. We need to get that sorted out clear. Honourable McPherson, also to come back in writing.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to go back to the issue of transfers and compensation. I mean, the transfers are decreasing.
because if we are being asked to, you know, to save money and we are experiencing budget cuts, I just can't understand how we can reconcile an increase of the number of employees or an increase in compensation of employees. And I think that the name of the game at the moment is doing more with less. That's what we need to do. And so I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with the surplus that is increasing, but we see compensation increasing. So Chair, with your permission, I've asked that we could receive a schedule of compensation and grading and actual amount of what the job specific role for each person is in that increase. Thank you.
Ryan, we need to get that again in writing, the actual schedule. Thank you. Honourable Williams, Honourable McConkey.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just a quick follow-up with regard to inspecting of export goods. I just want to know, for instance, we had a problem, and I don't know if we still got this problem, but as South Africa, we export oranges to the European Union, and if they pick up 5 oranges with a little black spot on them, then the whole nation stops importing our oranges. Now, I want to know, do you inspect those oranges before they go? Because it could be a matter that there's only 10 oranges in the whole 400 million tons that have got black spots on them, but because our inspection services are doing their job properly, and the European Union are doing a very thorough job, it could be a problem that our oranges are getting stopped to be exported because of the fact that the inspection services are so bad on this side. So I want to know, do you put emphasis on the goods that we export? That's what I want to know. Thank you.
Just want to indicate to Honourable William, there is a response. The Minister actually took that to the WTO, so I think that there's no necessity to deal with it. So do take some position of the European Union would like Spain to provide their oranges. Right, Honourable McConkey.
Yeah, in conclusion, I think it would be proper for us as members of Parliament to recommend this institution for a swift intervention and response to what we raised when we wanted them on oversight on the question of the generator. I just wanted to on record to say no, we want to congratulate you for that intervention. Thank you.
Yes, we do. I think you are doing a good job and we want you to improve that job. All right, and that's really what members are saying. But thank you very much. Once again, my apologies to you, Mr. Moodley, you and all of your staff. I noticed I never mentioned your name here, but I think it's Professor Tabeka or Tabela. Yeah, thank you very much. And who else came in? Was it yourself, Ms. McKemba? Was it yourself that came in? Yeah, thank you very much. And who else was speaking? Thank you very much. Now, I wanted to appreciate the attendance of all of you because you were here at 9 o'clock. That means you actually came here last night and gave us a lot of your time. But I think you share our views about the issue that we first addressed here this morning. But thank you. And please try and give us a response on these issues in writing. We would appreciate getting them before Friday because we're finalising our report in this regard. Thank you. And thank you to the DDG and their assistants as well for coming here. Thank you. We're going to have a 5-minute tea break. It's basically tea while we are voting. All right? So we're coming back at 11:30.
bear with us as we in company tribunal. Is that being presented by the advocate Labana? I don't know. Just notice here. Perhaps you can share that with me. Who's actually presenting the report?
Madam Chair, Mr. Fox, I am.
Thank you very much. Perhaps indeed you are, but I'm sure you don't often see me. I don't often see you. And quite frankly, you know, I'm not sure if you are Mr. or Advocate Labana. Perhaps you could confirm that.
That's simplified the process for me when they do this presentation by saying ADV as the bilateral.
I'm just asking because we don't know in advance who was presenting this, all right? And sometimes people get their number twos to present. Okay. Right, you'll be doing the presentation for us, and I want to thank you for waiting for this because you were scheduled a little bit earlier. And if you can just indicate to us where you were last in Parliament before this committee, and then in this term.
If my memory serves me well, I was last in Parliament in 2010.
That would have been in the previous committee.
Indeed.
Right. So, if you could then just present the people to us, I'm sure the new members, and everyone but myself, and Honourable Hill Lewis is a new member of the committee, so they wouldn't know your team, so if you could just introduce the team to them.
My chance to have been delayed and correct myself, that when I was before Parliament in 2013, it was under a different deck, or we did also present in the conference tribunal.
Present your team to us then.
Once again, thank you, Madam Chairperson, Ms. John Fox, honorable members, the DG, the DDG and the GC over of the DDI. My team, composed of to my left, is Ms. Agnes Marcelinani, a full-time member of the Conference Tribunal. She discharges the functions equivalent to those of a CEO. And to my right, the first lady, meaning to my right, is the Chief Financial Officer of the Conference Tribunal, is Irene Mandato. And to her right, is the Registrar of the Conference Tribunal, Mr. Mbodi. Members, you do have the presentation, and I'm just going to request that I'll be focused on the hard copy. The presentation is posted to you in line with what you've seen from the predecessors. Now, let me outline how we are going to deal with our presentations. You will see that the emphasis would be on our deliverables. We are going to refer to the safe delivery improvement plan, which is not attached to the documentation. You will also be referring to our service charter plan. And I'll be doing the most component part of the presentation, but reference on some of the pertinent important issues will be done by Ms. Agnes Marcelinani and the CFO, Ms. Irene Mandato, and the Registrar. The rudiments of our presentation starts with the heading strategic overview, background, strategic and annual performance plan. I have to sing with my assistants, we just beg a pardon and beg a pardon.
To the, we've got the presentation, forget that, we've got it right in front of us. Please carry on, Advocate, with what you were saying.
Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The background of the Conference Tribunal is to appreciate the establishment. It is a regulatory reform body in terms of the Companies Act of 2008. Now, one of the most important facets that should make one should appreciate what the Companies Tribunal is, one should appreciate that it's a quasi-judicial body. Now, it was established to provide accessible, speedy and cost-effective mechanism for the resolution of company disputes. Now, resolution of company disputes, our scholars say they should have been left to the courts in our country. Some believe that the lawmakers were quasi-intended to see to it that this function comes to the company's tribunal. As we go deeper, we'll explain the importance of the quasi-intendedness of our lawmakers. Now, it started in operation in September 2012. Lo and behold, we inducted as members of the company's tribunal in February 2012, but we started functioning almost 7 months down the line in September 2012. Now, currently, it has a staff complement of 13 out of 28 approved posts, and I assure you members that the diligence is given by these members, irrespective of the less numbers basis, and they are delivering the deliverables. It derives its mandate and functions from the company's Section 195. Now, its most important function, as I've said, the question itself, it adjudicates in relation to any application that may be made in terms of the Act, such as name dispute, directorship dispute, as well as application exemption from establishing social exemption committees. The abbreviation SEC talks about social exemption committees. These committees are very critical because the lawmakers wanted companies to be accountable in our country, accountable in the sense of giving the metrics of what they give back to the environment, to the communities within which they function, and to be accountable to the processes that qualify the values that define our country, equality, freedom, and human rights. And the further says that assisting the resolution of disputes in terms of ADR, mediation, conciliation, and arbitration. Members, one of the most important areas that the Conference Tribunal does is it is an alternative forum that makes disputes to be resolved quickly. For instance, if you go to court having a company's dispute, the processes may take you over a year or two to resolve the dispute. You could bring a dispute to the company's tribunal and it could be sorted out and resolved by mediation, conciliation, and arbitration. This area is very critical in the functions of the company's tribunal. The company's tribunal is addressing you, it's reaching out to the judiciary in our country. We are talking to the judge presidents, particularly the judge president of the High Court in Pretoria, not how the Judge Mulambo, to make the point that we effectuate this important function of alternative dispute resolution. Now, we further perform any other functions assigned the company's tribunal in terms of the Act. Now, one might think that the company's tribunal functions are just to resolve company law disputes or to position the economies of our country to make it a point that we utilize companies to show that we can improve the spending of our country. But also, our functions are to look at acts like the Patent Act, to look at acts like the Trademarks Act, to look at acts like the Copyright Act, and to look at acts like the Design Act. Now, we don't only focus on company law disputes. For instance, we could have a matter that deals with trademarks or copyright, and we'll explain that as we go into the remnants of our presentation. The company tribunal consists of members who are independent, and there's a chairperson. I'm privileged to serve as his chairperson. There's a deputy chairperson, unfortunately, could not be here. And not just that, 10 other members appointed on a full-time and part-time basis. I assure you that these members are independent. Amongst them, there are professors, there are practitioners, there are acting judges, there are senior researchers, there are academics, and practitioners in other areas of the law. Currently, there are 13 part-time members and one full-time member of the conference right now. Ms. Macedonian is sitting next to me. I did mention earlier on that she sets the functions equivalent to those of the CEO. Now, on Monday, finds prevalence of the company's itself and the constitution of the Republic of South Africa. And that's where we also derive more authentic goals and vision. Our vision is to be a well-facilitated and dispute resolution organization that contributes to the promotion of fair and ethical business practices. You will note, members, that the emphasis of dispute resolution organization comes time and again. I have mentioned and highlighted that it will be important that our courts are not built with development of adjudicating members that could be, I mean, members that would be referred to the company's tribunal. Hence, the company's tribunal will put its head on in instances where it will be dealing with companies that are disputed by all mediation, arbitration, and conciliation. And that process has already started. So how do we achieve that vision, that objective? Our mission does that. We adjudicate applications made in terms of the company's act, and we provide alternative dispute resolution through conciliation, mediation, and arbitration. It's coming again and must time and again. And with time, we might see situations in our country where certain company law disputes only before courts of law, only before the company's tribunal. And as our jurisprudence within the company's tribunal grows, you will realize that this service is going to be very critical. You want speedy and efficient means of resolving disputes. And all of you can imagine here that our courts are so bad. I can imagine our highest court in the Western Cape probably adjudicates more than 500 members a week. And you can imagine if some of them are company law disputes, they could be referred to the company's tribunal. Our values are underpinned on values that we hear all the time, the values underpinning our constitution. All the values of the company's tribunal find fitness in the values of equality, freedom, and equal rights, equality, freedom, and human rights. I beg your pardon. Now you will see that those values are inclusive, transparency, credibility, efficiency, professionalism, respect, and ethical. And that now comes the strategic plan. Where do we want to see the company's tribunal in the current year and in the next coming 5 years now? Our main goal being to adjudicate and make orders in relation to an application. Also that we should do this timely, speedily, transparently, and fairly. The question that we need to pose ourselves is, how do we do it? We can do it because our legislatures were far-sighted to see to it that we become an alternative dispute forum. Now, we adjudicate our decisions in line with the timeline. I'll be specific with what a certain members would like to hear. When we get applications, we make the point that within 40 days, the filing and the completion of a process that makes them right, makes them to be adjudicated upon. As I'm talking to you, our applications are being resolved within 35 days after the filing of documents. An ordinary member of the public will go to the company tribunal and file probably a company law dispute, probably involving shareholding or name dispute. Now, that process has to make a point that there's a resolution in 35 days. Now, in the earlier year, that is the 2014-15, it was 40 business days. In the current year, we are talking of 35 days. Now, we have an average of 12 applications that we try to resolve in 30 business days. I assure you, members, it is not easy to draw and write a decision. A decision of the company's tribunal includes an order and reasons. Our members who sit in the tribunal make the point that 12 applications are resolved within empty vesicular states. Now, some of you may raise eyebrows and say, how come? Because there are other IVNAs that you might have heard about. Now, some IVNAs could probably do 100 of these decisions in a month. But that's why there's no need for them to write that decision and reason it. With the company's IVNA, we have to write that decision and reason it. If you go on the website, you will realize that our decisions are reasoned and they are written. Now, in the previous year, the 2014 and 2015, 10 applications have to be resolved within 30 business days after allocation. In the current year, it's 12. Now, members, the emphasis is business days. I'm certain that you are lying to the fact that business days excludes public holidays and weekend days. We try to make it a point that we adhere to the standards of accountability. We make the point that the company's tribunal is accessible. We have internet that is known to all the standards in our country and to all corners of our country. There are Hawkins. There are outreach programs. We collaborate in partnerships to make the point that we achieve the goal intended to make the company's tribunal to set the purpose that is intended for. Our legislature said that it must be an alternative dispute resolution forum. We are also driven by the goal of making the point that we deliver our services by making the point that we provide our service providers in line but acceptable time by standards. For instance, with the company's tribunal, our current policy is that when a service provider renders a service for us, payment should be effected within 28 days after the service has been requested. This is in the current year, in the current 2015-2016. In the previous year, it was 30 days. Now, it's just to inform you that we recognize the function of the company's tribunal as an alternative dispute resolution forum, not only to resolve dispute, it must also be transparent and accountable by being simply exemplary, even in making the point that our service providers, who come before us, of course, in line with supply chain management policy and procurement, in line with Section 117 of the Constitution, are dealt with fairly. Now, the alternative dispute resolution forum members that we have been fit on, you said that in as far as applications are concerned, they must be resolved within 37 days. And in the previous year, it was 40 business days. In as far as alternative dispute forum issues are concerned, applications must be resolved within 32 days from the date of receipt of the application. Now, this is in the current year. Now, for you to appreciate once again what I'm saying is, there's a debate in amongst members of the company's tribunal that this is a very tedious task. For a judge to sit and write a decision within 1 month, having entertained a case, is an achievement. Because judges are pressurized. There's so much that they have to do. But members of the company's tribunal, in line with that spirit, try by all means to make the point that they resolve this dispute if they come before them within 32 days. Now, it informs you about the importance of the company's tribunal standing as a dispute resolution forum. But it's an undertaking and a commitment to make it a point that any company law dispute, if it's brought before the company's tribunal, it will be resolved within the next coming 32 days. Of critical importance is for the members to appreciate that we are a small entity. If I were to equate it, I would say we are the youngest child of the DTI enforcement entities. We actually, if I refresh your minds, that we impacted in 2012, I can imagine that the NCRC, which was before us, is our sister agency that is older than us. Now, that should tell you about our performance indicators and our performance. But for instance, when we adjudicate applications, we made the point that in this current year, 90% of the decisions that have been issued within 30 working days are ahead. And we achieved that goal with effort, of course. The percentages of decisions and orders that we seek to achieve is in line with our mandate that reminds us that we are an alternative dispute forum that has to fulfill that mandate. Members, in as far as the issue that uncertain that we'd like to hear about, dealing with medium-term expenditure framework, the allocated budget, the CFO is going to take you through it, and she will address the new revenue allocation, expenditure allocation, and at this stage, I would like to pack this subject and give over to her. I'll be taking the reins back to complete and give over to the to the full-time member to deal with other aspects. I'm giving over to the CFO.
Right, the CFO, if you just give your name there, please, all right, for recording.
Okay, that's my name is Ayuna Tasso, the Chief Financial Officer at Company China. Thank you. I will be taking you over to our financial allocation in the next impact period. Okay. Like the chair has mentioned, we are still a small entity. Currently, in terms of the program, we've got two programs that we've named administration, and the other one is adjudication. The administration program is basically the support function, which consists of the finance function, the supply chain, the IT, information technology, the human resource management, the communication, the research, and the register function. Those are the medical services. Those are the functions that falls under administration. And in terms of the adjudication, that the program which deals more with our part-time tribunal members. That's the allocation, their funding goes into that program. And we rely on the grants that we receive from the DTI. And as you see in the presentation, for 2016, in terms of the administration funding, we've got only 12 million, which is allocated to the administration funding, and we've got about 2.6 million allocated to the adjudication function. And the same goes to the other MTL. And in terms of the revenue allocation, like I said, our main revenue is the grant, which in 2015-16 is 14 million. 2017-18 is 15.0 million, and then 2017-18 15.8. The projection was done based on the allocation that we received from the DTI. And on the other income, in the beginning when the tribunal started, because there were basically no capacity in terms of personnel to undertake some of the functions, we did have some surplus funds that we did receive approval from the treasurer. And the other income that we got is basically from the interest of the investment account, because that funds have been invested, though we don't have a plan that we are utilizing those funds for. But that's basically currently we are receiving some interest. And the other interest is basically from our current account. And in terms of the expenditure allocation, we do compensate our members as and when they handle the cases in line with the policy that we have. And the projection for 2015-16 is 2.3 million, 2.4 million in 2017, and 2.5 in 2017-18. The bulk of our expenditure, which is about 70%, goes to compensation of employees. And the goods and services, which comprises our administrative and operational expenditure, is 2.2 million in 2015-16, 1.1 million and 1.0 million. there is a slight decline in the cost of the allocation that we are receiving, which means that we will have to implement some of the cost-cutting measures as and when we proceed. However, we are busy with the DTI in terms of the increase in the baseline. And then the capital expenditure currently, most of it we fund it from the surplus fund that we have, that I just mentioned earlier on. So that basically is the financial projections over the entire period. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just looking at that, Ms. Matato. Right, okay. So we've got the financial. Do you want to carry on then, Advocate?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just highlight some points which are contained in our presentation. The company's tribunal is research driven. Its composition, as I've alluded earlier on, has been academics, professors, practitioners, acting judges, informs you that one of its foundational pillars is for research reports to be made on comparative analysis of company tribunals in other jurisdictions. The composition of the tribunal itself informs the members that goal could be achieved. For instance, in the current period 2015 and 16, it's intended to produce one research report on comparative analysis of companies' tribunals in other jurisdictions. As far as fight advocacy services are concerned, and hosting of seminars, to host one seminar on alternative dispute resolution, and those processes have started an engagement and been put in place to proceed with that. In as far as media engagement is concerned, the media being critical in our country, in the current year, we intend to listen to media statements and participating in two radio interviews. For instance, we have a Facebook program where we assign to reach out to various radio stations in all provinces to make the point that they accord us a hearing to educate the public about the company's tribunal. Reaching out processes in terms of the current year medium-term goals, we then participating in 7 cities, for instance, the city of Tshwane, city of Limpopo province, Soweto, Ekurhuleni, East London, and Devon. Now, as you can imagine, this can be achieved in 1 year, so it has to be spread with the subsequent following years. In the other years, in medium terms, we intend participating in 8 locations: Kimberley, Bloemfontein, Port Elizabeth, Potchefstroom, Mohali City, Emmanuel, Richards Bay, and Mafeking. And this goal could be achieved one foster complement increases from 13 probably to the 23 that is being targeted. We also have a far better ambition to participate in 8 in the oncoming medium-term target years in reaching out to the ordinary person. This is one area. Each time the company tribunal meets with the minister, the GCOO and the DDG, emphasis is being made as to what do we do to reach out to the public. And this goal can be achieved, members, if the company tribunal's goal is not to serve the health and the privileged in our country. If the company's tribunal is able to reach out that common man, please permit me to use this expression, in the corner of Limpopo, in Northern KwaZulu-Natal, in Tofimbaba, in East Cape, it has achieved its goal. Now, if you look at the long title as to what the framers of the New Companies Act intended to achieve by establishing company tribunal, they wanted us to improve efficient business expediency. They wanted us to have a harmonious relationship between the shareholders and companies. They wanted the directors of the companies not to take ordinary shareholders and members of the public for granted. And these goals could be achieved if the company's tribunal appreciates that it's not intended to serve only the privileged and not and those who are literate in our country. The issue of risk management, the conference webinar takes a serious, for instance, this reliance on the DTI IT infrastructure, and that process, of course, will be annihilated once we appoint our own IT managers and we have procurement infrastructures that we put in place. We believe in capacity building workshops, and I assure you members that those instances that I've given have been effectuated with effort in the conference webinar. Now, I've told you about the turnaround times, that our function being adjudicator to share company law disputes and to make it a point that we are an efficient alternative dispute resolution forum. It calls for our members to be well versed with the company's act. As I've explained to you, that their disposition makeup is that they are academics, professors, practitioners, they are able to appreciate their task without effort. The critical aspects that I'm going to request Ms. Masenyani to address will relate to human resource and information technology strategies. Madam Chair, I'm giving over to Ms. Masenyani.
Thank you, Chairperson. In terms of our human resource strategy, as we've already alluded to, the total staff complement is currently 50, and the approved staff complement is 20. And one of our key enablers that you have requested us to indicate that we need to engage in our human resource capability. So we are currently short-staffed, and therefore our intention is to make sure that we can link and co-financing and with the correct caliber of people to meet the envisaged growth path, and that we have a culture of high performance that is linked with our rewards for excellence. Due to the financial constraints, we've indicated that we will not be in a position to optimally fill the establishment. But we are engaging the department and national treasury to ensure that we are collectively to deliver on the growth that we envisage will take place as we go on an outreach campaign, make sure that people are aware of our mandate, our post, and our services that we do render. In terms of our information technology strategy, our information technology strategy is intended to make sure that we are efficient, but also that we are acceptable to the public. And in terms of the information technology strategy, we intend to introduce a case management system. In terms of the case management system, there will be an e-filing. People will be able to lodge the application on the internet, and we'll also be able to link into SMS, you know, the latest technology, so that people can be able to reach our services and become aware of our services. In terms of our communication strategy, we are forming strategic partnerships with municipalities so that we are accessible to the public. As the chairperson has indicated, we are also holding strategic partnerships with the court to make sure that they refer some of the cases to the company's tribunal. We also have an anti-fraud and corruption process, policy, that some of the principles are geared to ensuring that because we are an institution that focuses on ethical business practices, that even we ourselves internally promote those same types of principles. So we have principles such as our approach to fraud and corruption is zero tolerance. We are accountable, and also we protect whistleblowers. And those are some of the principles, and that we have implemented effective anti-fraud control measures, and we encourage staff to report any such mechanism. We are in the process of establishing an anti-fraud and corruption hotline. I think the process is complete.
Yes.
The process is complete, so we will be publicizing the number in a short while. So those are some of the commitments that we have in terms of delivering on our strategy. In terms of the service delivery improvement plan, the chairperson has alluded to those targets that are improving over time, as he was introduced to them in the presentation. Like he was indicating that we had the target such as 40 days, the targets have improved to 35 working days. So there is continuous improvement that is intended to be introduced as the organization grows and we get all the more people on board. Thank you, Chairman.
Mr. Glabala, you and your team have gone through a presentation which us has been sorely needed in the light of a number of things that have been occurring in the last year or so. Now, I see that the work that you are doing, and I want to say this at the outset before I entertain any comments and questions from the committee, that you yourself emphasized that the mission, the purpose of Companies Tribunal was really the creation of this world-class adjudicatory body, etc., and to try and develop, you know, a sort of dispute resolution by other means than simply the current court processes. And for that, I mean, we must say you've given a fair account of a number of the issues. There are many other issues that I myself would want to have clarified, but I'll do that at the end if members of the committee don't raise it. But I'd like to thank you for bringing down the whole team to be with us here this morning. All right? Let's turn to the committee. Honourable Hill Lewis. Yes, Honourable Imam. Did I see another hand? No, not yet.
Very much, Chairperson. Advocate Labala, it's nice to see you in the committee with your team. I don't recall having seen you in our committee before, so it's good to have the Companies Tribunal before us. Given the mandate and the values that you discussed at some length at the beginning of your presentation, you will understand that this committee was concerned to learn the forensic audit reports into the conduct of yourself and your deputy in terms of expense plans at the Companies Tribunal. And I wanted to ask you some questions about that. Specifically, Advocate Labar, why is it that on a number of occasions, and I'm referring to the report which I have here, you claimed for a full day of expenses for work which in many cases not take more than a couple of hours, and in one case, for work that only took 15 minutes. And yet you claimed a full day's expenses from the Companies Tribunal. Do you not agree that that's an obvious abuse of taxpayers' money? You see, the reports in a number of, in further rounds, I'll ask you some more questions about it, but the reports in a number of different examples really falls into question the integrity of you, sir, and the leadership of the Companies Tribunal. And I wonder, given the mandates and values that you discussed at the beginning, is it possible for the Companies Tribunal to continue to function properly, effectively, with serious questions of integrity hanging over the head of its leadership? My second question, or third question rather, is, Advocate Labala, why did you choose not to cooperate with the investigation carried out by Grant Thornton? The report makes very clear that you declined to be interviewed, that you declined to respond to questions, and that you did not cooperate with the investigation. Now, this investigation was ordered by the Minister, an official investigation of the government of South Africa, and to me it seems almost over and above the specific allegations
lots of echo, the chairperson remarks that the E, the very necessary words are going. We know that our courts are inundated and there is a dire need for a speedy resolution of disputes in our country. My focus, though, is on the subcontinent. If you are operating and in terms of this presentation, you are very efficient and very effective. One wonders whether the need for 28 posts, because at present you are less than 50%, but it seems that you are achieving your goals and your objectives. Perhaps one wonders whether you are getting enough recognition from the company. Is it a matter of competition? Perhaps you're not getting as many cases as you envisaged when you put down the figure of 28 subcontinents. And when we talk about the competition, perhaps the next question is, how do you market yourself? And in that competition, whether the potential clients, the companies, prefer you or they go to other establishments or to the courts or to alternative tribunals. So all focus around efficiency for people who are less than 50% of the establishment. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable.
Well, thank you very much, Chair. I think I want to follow up on the question that is being asked now. In your presentation, you are saying that currently you have a subcontinent of 13 out of 28 approved posts. Are these posts approved by the Treasury or approved by the CIA or just approved by you? They are funded. If that is the case, why are these posts not being filled? Second, you spoke with me of the government indicator and the government guidance that educated applications should be done within 10 days or within working days, 10 working days. And you planned that for 2015-2016, 90%.
then other ways of, you know, complying with these things, other systems and so on. So, given that the CCT 40 years from day and wasn't always the case for the last 100 years, what other system do you understand is a good one, a good governance that says we're paid on the basis of X, and therefore do I sign something like employees who come and sign if they're going to do this? How is this information? Are we paid by the hour? Are we paid simply by saying we held a meeting? And that's how it works. That's the one issue. The other issue is, do you have structures such as internal auditing committees and so on? Yeah. Audit committees. Do you have that kind of thing available? And thirdly, in terms of claims in general, often most of us see cash and little claims that next to nothing. But in the end, they say one must keep account of all of this. What systems do you have in place that the AG talks about the need to, I'm going to use a colloquial term, beef up your systems, but you know, establish more sound systems? There does seem to be some grounds for that kind of challenge. Perhaps also in your responding to the group chief operating officer may wish to add certain points in this regard as well. A final thing is, who's the accounting officer? Are you the accounting officer of the company tribunal? Who is the accounting officer here? Thanks.
Madam Chair, I have this big elephant that I have to chew and I have a small mouth. I will try to deal with this in bits and pieces. Mr. Lewis, I assure you of the following. The only thing that I can afford is my integrity. As a senior counsel, when I put my head on, as an acting judge, when I put my head on. When I accepted to serve at the tribunal, I was looking for a job. I was intending to serve my country. And I was searching for an institution that would assist me to serve my country in line with my training. And when I applied to be the chairperson of the company's tribunal, with respect, and I'm going to say this with enormous reserves of humility, I was a senior counsel. And I kept on saying that the company's tribunal is a quasi-judicial body. It's like a court of law, only on a minimum scale. And the only way in which I could do it was to do it that way, to serve at the company's tribunal. Now, it was an honor to be recognized that I qualified to be its chairperson. And I'm happy that two of the most distinguished persons I've learned to respect said through my interview they are in this forum. To be specific, the GCO herself and the DDG herself. And before I even deal with the nitty-gritties of your question, permit me to say the following. They were highly competent persons who could have qualified to be chairpersons. I shivered as I was humbled with that gesture. There is something that they saw in me that still humbles me.
We would like you to respond to the questions directly. Time is not against us. Your interview would be on record. Thank you. As we are going to examine your character, we can call you back if you like that. Can we rather just deal with the issues?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me deal with the question of the case. That I claimed a full day when I completed the work for hours. That I claimed for 15 minutes and that I abused the taxpayer's money. Honorable Member T. Lewis, the company's tribunal has got parameters.
When the company's pricing have started, the parameters were put at 3,200 for the chair and 2,700 for the members. Something will surprise you. The administrators started the DCI themselves. They themselves said after themselves that we can't give these members those figures. Not us. You'll be amazed. The insurance said, no, not with this type of persons that we have. I do not know what persuaded them, but lo and behold, the minister, in his majority, converted these figures to 7,000 rands a day for the chairperson, to 6,000 rands a day for the deputy chair, and to 5,000 rands a day for the ordinary members. Now, I charge my fees at a company's trial this way, and I appreciate it. As a senior counsel, I'm humbled and ashamed to tell you that I charge 35,000 rands a day in 2012 when I started the training now. My fee was between 35,000 rands a day and 30,000 rands a day. I was saving my country just to pay myself 7,000 rands a day, 700 rands per hour. Now, what happened was, when I work for an hour, that fee gets divided, but when I work for more than 4 hours, in line with the policy then of the country's tribunal, it's a full day fee. And I assure you, it was not easy. My compassion and drive to serve the tribunal, I feel, was not to earn fees. With respect, I had better fees outside. That issue being addressed, I will tell you as follows. I'm willing to give you my fees. All my fees of the company's tribunal. There's never been such an accountability. Mr. Lewis, I'm willing to give my fees and I'm going to request the CFO to send them to you. I would like you to look at them. You will never see such an accountability in fees. 50 minutes, 30 minutes, all day's fees. And you know why I did that? I did that because I knew that these fees had to be accounted for. And those fees will be made available to you, Mr. Henry's, before the end of the day on Friday, I assure you. Now, of essence, the 50 minutes, the full day's fees, were just in line with the parameters put by the minister. When I leave my chamber, where I was charging 25,000 rand a day, 2,500 rand an hour to go to the tribunal, to go and charge 700 rand a day, part of that, 7,000 rands a day, it was in line in giving back to my country. I recognize that it is the taxpayers' money. But the integrity of the leadership of the company's tribunal, why did I not cooperate with the forensic auditors? I wrote a letter to the GCO OCCA when this investigation started, and that letter was written by myself and my deputy chair, where we gave an undertaking that we'll cooperate. And we cooperated. That's why this report, in as much as we do not agree with it, was produced. There's never been a time when we're caught, we didn't appear, except when I was being called as a senior counsel, except when I was being called acting as a judge, except when I was doing my own cases. And that's the basis why I accepted to be a part-time chair. And it's an honor, Mr. Hendricks, for me to say the following in conclusion. The minister, each time I met him, the GCOO is here, the DDG is here. I would like to remind them that I appreciate their maturity to accept that I should be a part-time chair. So they accept that I begin my practice, they accept that I act as a judge, they accept that I sit in a commission, and they also accept that and the chairperson of the company is right now on a part-time basis. And lo and behold, Mr. Hendricks, he gave me a staff compliment which is surrounding this one. Very efficient. Some of the things that would make me to be at the company right now almost every day from March 2012 to today are no longer applicable because of the staff compliment. The company is very closing. It is the only agency of the DDI I can think of that was inducted in a year and started functioning within that year without staff complement. And I'm on record as saying that process. For 7,000 reps a day, as against 25,000 reps a day. For 700 reps an hour, as against 2,500 an hour. Sometimes 30,000 reps a day, sometimes 3,000 reps an hour, because I wanted to serve my country. The issue of peace is over. But let me conclude by saying, the GCO is here. The minister, in our meeting, in 2013, on his road show, he visited the agencies of the companies that you know, sent the following to me and my deputy chair. This issue of our investigation is closed. It has got no merit. We will send an apology to you. But there's something that amazes me. This issue is closed internally, but it's not closed externally. It puzzles me. I'm relaxed. I got taken by surprise when I got a call from a media person a couple of months ago saying I've got to answer certain questions. And I said to him, we speak to my principals within the DTI. They will tell me that in a size of concern, the minister told me as follows in front of very senior support ministers, the DG, in the line of October, I said that meeting. I myself was present in GCO OECA. The minister said this issue is closed. This investigation has no merit. And I assure you, Mr. Hendricks, it has got no merit. I wish I could conclude further by saying the following. The womb that gave birth to this crisis was an anonymous whistleblower. It informs you about how suspect it was. And I said to the minister, you have to do your function as a minister. If there's an allegation which is serious against me as a senior counsel and an acting judge, I would not like anyone to come and accuse you that you are protecting me and my deputy chair. Do what's right. But the minister did something very methodical to us and won my respect. He did not suspend me, and I'll tell you why. The GCO called me and said, advocate about it. The minister is alleged, basically, that this person is anonymous. But the minister is concerned because the DTI agencies and the DTI, particularly the minister, is concerned about the corruption that is happening between the DTI agencies and the buildings that they want to occupy for their agencies. Now, coincidentally, at that time, the company's president was looking for a building where he could go and house himself. Now, that was the real issue that the forensic investigation was established. The issue of the fees was not an issue. I'll tell you why. But the department knew my fees. They knew that they are paying me less. They knew that I'm not interested in money. They understood. They knew that I'm a part-time chair. They knew that I only can afford one thing, my integrity. And I'm going to close by saying,
as it is, I know that you're wanting to give us all the details, but Honourable Hilders is not the committee. You're regretting the committee. You may have asked the question, and anything you wish to give him, if you want to make a personal little gift to him, you can do that from your house. This is a committee meeting. So anything you wish to hand out that has been raised here will be given in to the committee secretary and not to Honourable Hill Lewis, the prime gift. That's not the way we operate. So I must just, and I must just remind you that there are a lot more people besides Honourable Hill Lewis in this room on this side that we ask questions. We want them responded to. You have responded to the substance of the fees, and we've got that, and the substance of the time. And I think that your commitment is clear at this point. But there are issues we do want you to respond to, advocates, please.
Madam Chair, I'm humbled and I apologize. I would like to part ways with the subject of the fees and my inappropriateness and my lack of integrity. I think I've done a mouthful. Honorable Mr. Sima, I'm humbled by the fact that you recognize that the company's tribunal exempts itself. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. The company's tribunal exempts itself and thus collective force in line its mandate to function with a staff complement of 13 instead of 28. How we do it is magical. Let me tell you something, honorable members. When we started in September after being inducted in February, there's only 3 persons. And we could adjudicate, we did administration, we did finances, stringent as it was. As you may know, honorable members, one of the issues that was raised on the forensic audit that had missed us, that was not a subject of the complaint. Actually, this aspect, I'll also give it over when I'm done with this aspect, Mr. Musima, my colleague, Ms. Masilenyani, will complain. But let me just close by saying, there have been a pattern in the process of the company's tribunal up till today. There are members who take 3, 4, 5 tasks, and they do it in line with understanding the mandate of the company's tribunal. And I'm proud to say that I'm humbled to lead such a team. Now, Ms. Masilenyani will be your question, how do we market ourselves? And why companies go to court and our alternative tribunals instead of only coming to us? I can personally deal with that. I'll leave the remaining questions to Ms. Masilenyani.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the subcontinent, we have identified as a strategic risk not that we do not need the remainder of the coast. The reason why we are not feeding the other coast is that we only have fixed budget to 15 positions. So currently there are 2 vacancies which will be filled in June. So we are, as I've indicated, engaging the department in order to make sure that we fill those posts. What we are doing in order to manage the risk, we are doing multi-feeding, we are doing sub-rotation, for instance. The manager search is also responsible for communication. You know? So that is the risk to the organization that we are managing it within the limited funds that we have. So we're doing system, we're doing stuff. And in terms of who approved the staff establishment, it was approved by the Minister of Trade and Industry. How do we market ourselves? As we have indicated, we market ourselves through the strategic partnerships we form with the municipality. The partnerships are indicated with the municipality of the Metro Secure Fund and also the city municipality. We've been to Alexander, to Kazne on this outreach program where we inform communities about our roles, our services that we provide. On the issue of leadership, I just wanted to just say that the company tribunal has since inception received an unqualified audit. We are audited by the Auditor General of South Africa. So it is an accountable organization and an accountable leadership. In terms of the systems of governance, of good governance that we have, we do have an internal auditor. Our internal auditors are PwC, Pricewaterhouse, and Coopers. And what we have done, we've requested them to go through all our internal controls. For the type of an organization that we have to do a matrix for us to look at our policies, our procedures, to tell us where there are gaps in our policies and our
our position. And I can assure members that in terms of the guests, I don't think that we are much guests in the control. We are looking at that, we are addressing that. So I am confident that as the company tribunal, we are an accountable organization. We do have a claim for members, for part-time tribunal members. We have a claims policy against which members are claiming, and the policy has been reviewed as part of the continuous improvement process, like any other organization. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just a minute here. So continue as we move along.
Might I ask Honourable Musiman that it's not that the support of the CCRB led by the DDG, the GCOO, and the DG itself has seen the campus tribunal and the campaign from its induction date up till it had additional staff component. And I assure you that we're not standing on the shoulders of the DTI, we're on their left. They were there to make the campaign. And it's through those efforts and joint strategies with the specific members I'm mentioning, of course, under the directive of the minister, that we managed to come through.
Thank you very much. Will you finish on Advocate Lona? I just wanted to see because something urgent came up on the rules. My apologies. Will you finish?
We're responding to Mr. Musiman.
Honorable
Mr. Mkombi, Honorable Member Mkombi, that I would like to give to some of my colleagues to deal with.
All right. So just hold on there, okay, for a minute. I've turned around just a request here, clarification on one of the rules. And in that, I noticed almost immediately two hands go up, clearly not with what I was inquiring. I would like, if possible, for the company tribunals to complete the responses and then follow up. Is that okay on that note? I've also asked, of course, the group chief operating officer to come in as part of the responses, as you know. Now, if she had her hand up, Ms. Scholes, I'm not sure if it was on the matter of a couple of questions that have come in already, but do go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Jane. And just in response to some of the questions that have been posed, I want to talk specifically in terms of the governance structures that have been in place at the company tribunal, and then more specifically at the interview. I think it's important to note that the allegations that have been received came 9 months into the establishment of the company tribunal. Minister Davies received these, I think, on the 20th of May, and on the 26th of May he had asked that a preliminary investigation because to look into the issues. I think Mr. Zamala has also alluded to the issue of the bill because that was one of the issues that was raised. The investigation was conducted. We looked at all of the issues and dealt with the recommendations. And what has been put in place is that the audit committee was established, I think, late in 2012, so the even audit committee has oversight. The GI's audit committee as well engages on all forensic reports, and they also looked at the reports. Then the minister had appointed a full-time tribunal member on the 1st of July 2013 to look at operations and strategies because the focus of all of the other tribunal members had been around adjudication of cases. Then I think subsequent to us getting the recommendations, the DGI internal audit unit also conducted a financial health check at the company's tribunal, and in fact had discovered that one member had been underpaid because another member that had been overpaid by an amount of 460 rand, and all of those have been rectified and dealt with. The minister has also given this report to the company's tribunal audit committee chairperson and asked him to look into all the issues of internal control to make sure that they are addressed. Those are the specific interventions at the company's tribunal.
I think just broadly, in terms of the PFA, accounting authorities also change our accounting authorities in their own right, and they report into the executive authority, and I think that's an important point during the point to note. Then there's also the automated letter of statutory and oversight of internal insurance. And the minister annually convenes all of the audit committee chairs of all of the entities where they have are able to raise issues directly with the minister of matters concerning governance or lack of internal control directly with the minister. Then I think, Chair, this thing that the department is currently applying. The ZECA has a policy framework on governance that we are reviewing, looking at all of the issues and how we can strengthen governance. We can make that available if the committee would like to look at that and also give give inputs. And then we are also looking at our related methodology. And those are key activities that I have made in this current financial year. So those are the inputs I wanted to make. Thank you, Chair.
Well, I think beyond the basic law and governance issues I raised as chairperson, thank you very much. But there's just a little of our the DDG would also like to come in here. And then the DDG in 2 weeks.
Chairperson, thank you very much and honourable members for the opportunity to get input into this. So I'm just going to focus on the aspect around the resources for tribunals. The chairperson and the full-time member of the tribunal correctly pointed out that there's an issue of ongoing discussions as we get the operations of the organization. But I must say that from the onset, when we did the business case or the tribunal setting up, we looked at what it is that it intended to do and also protecting the growth. When organizations start initially, you don't find a lot of cases going through. But as they then get to do their work and as people get to know about them as a channel or a platform to raise issues and resolve disputes, we do anticipate that there will be growth in that. And with that growth, certainly you will need to fill some of those vacancies. So I think it's not just to say where they are at right now and in terms of their performance right now. Yes, there's a lot of effort that goes into really the limited resources. It's an issue of the financial resources, hence they are not able to cover all of the subcontinent. But it's an area that we're looking at to see and ensure that ultimately they are able to get the resources that they need. So I'll just indicate that in terms of some of the activities that they've been engaging on around seminars and conferences and workshops on their functions, this is becoming very useful. But what we can expect is that you know, maybe next year or 2 years down the line, we'll see their workload increasing as a lot of companies will then stop going to court and then kind of send most of their issues there. It is one of the objectives of the whole reform around reducing the cost of doing business. When directors and companies are having disputes, the ideal situation is that that dispute gets to be resolved as soon as possible. And therefore, as an alternative platform for that, the tribunal is going to increasingly be inundated with a lot of requests to do that. So when we look at their resources going forward, it must be looked at in light of the possibilities that this is likely to increase in terms of the resource load. Thank you.
Now, thank you very much. Now, of course, there are two questions that are still outstanding, which I think the Chairperson was going to respond to. I think the one is from Honourable Akongi. Is that correct?
That is so, Chair. One of your questions I'm going to give it to the Register of the Campus Tribunal, which is the percentages today. My colleague, Ms. Maslina, has done to deal with the other one. In as far as the issue of irregular expenditures, fruitless, expensive, and wasteful, after the response of none, I would like the CFO to deal with it. Those are the only two outstanding issues that will be dealt with. Some, I assure you that you're going to find the response from my colleagues. Let me just refresh them. Honourable Monkey's question is, it appears that on the question of irregular, fruitless and wasteful expenditures, we said none. He would like to know what was the speaker's co-argument for this issue. And the other question was the percentages of the adjudicated cases. Thank you. I will give it over to my colleagues.
Your name for the record, right?
Thank you, Chair. My name is Devon Bouzadeh, Registered Private Administrator. Our cases are adjudicated only by some large adjudicated after a hearing. So cases that are adjudicated after a hearing day, 87% were adjudicated within 83 days. And the ones decided after allocation of hearings were, per allocation, were 92%. That's what it sounds like.
I'm just trying to check here. So that was to Bolkhor, Mr. Bolkhor, is it? Mabutle?
Mabutle.
Okay, I thought so. Wasn't that sharp? Okay, sorry about that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, with regards to irregular expenditure, in our 2014 annual report, company tribunal initiated 193,000 irregular, and in the 2014-15 current financial year that we're being audited is 110,000. So the reason why we had it as part of our indicators is that we don't want any irregular and fraudulent expenditure going forward. We have the controls that we are putting in place, the checklist to ensure that we comply with the applicable supply chain management rules.
But I'm saying the outstanding questions are yours, and they're the most difficult, but I will deliver them in the flows as follows. Let me refresh you if you don't remember them. You were concerned about this issue that was part of the forensic body, that was initially not the complaint on the CCTV and the access cards. And you also want to know about the internal body committees and external body committees. Coincidentally, the external body committee was there within 8 months after we established, and it's headed by a very competent feminine person, Ms. Sitari. The internal body functions were given to us. The DDI has always been practical and facilitated. Initially, when we started, they gave us KPMG, and currently it's been done by PricewaterhouseCoopers. Systems in place, petty cash was one of the complaints, Madam Chair. One of the most remarkable things that surprised us initially when the complaint of the forensic body started is that the building. And the GCO also said to me that, Chair, the minister is concerned about corruption as far as obtaining space is concerned. And this is another issue. Careful coming as the forensic audit. Was done, and we're not even asked questions about them. There were allegations that the chairperson utilizes the company's tribunal petty cash to buy lunch for himself, something that really affected my ego, but that's not an issue that I would like to deal with at this level. The last issue pertained to, yes, access cards. Madam Chair and honorable members, the only thing that I can afford is my integrity. And I still repeat, I would like to make my fees from the inspection of the company tribunal to be laid. And I will allow any member of this August forum, if they want to investigate where I've done an assignment, I'll be open to cooperate with them. And it has always been my spirit. But in closing, permit me to say this is my last parting shot on this issue. I believe that the Minister of the DDI, as executive authority, represents one of the most well-performing entities in this government. It's internationally known. Madam Chair, I was in Washington and I was surprised that one or two senators were speaking about the performance of this department. Any member of this August forum, if he or she is of the view that this minister would tolerate corrupt people, then it would be betraying the principles that underpin this department is performing so much. And that's my last take on this.
Well, I think you take some part, but Philip, you are aware, some of these things are not on a personal basis, but they affect the government's body and governance. We have the unfortunate experience of having to be faced with situations where equipment has just flown out of offices in the face of security, etc. So we say, how did this happen? And then you learn that up to a particular point in time, it had not been thought necessary to put X in place or Y in place, because, yes, it's like we say that every member of parliament is honourable, are we? I don't know. You know, and we demand to go in without putting our suitcases and through what you call it, the electronic, because we are honourable. But of course, it's one thing to say that. It's another that says, look, that's the policy. Everyone's going through there. And regrettably, we have found that there are slip-ups here and there. And we were described to be as this committee that, broadly speaking, some of the challenges we face under the MCC at one point in time are not repeated anywhere else. That's the lesson we learned the hard way. And so on. And I think as a member of the judicial institution, you would understand that. And you would question responsibility if we let that sort of thing lie. So these things are not always directed on a personal level, they are directed on a broader position. So we appreciate your responses in that regard, advocate. But there are three follow-ups. I'm starting with my ex, because it's been up for some time now, Honourable Hill Lewis. Just further down, I don't know, Honourable Mkongi, if afterwards your question was responded to. You also had a hand up. I'm looking at yourself, Honourable MacPherson. Further down, we all addressed on the matter. Honourable Hill Lewis.
Thank you very much for your responses, Advocates. The report makes clear that on the 29th of January and on the 12th of February 2014, Grant Thornton had appointments of you which you did not honour. They then asked you to send a list of the facts that would suit you for a follow-up interview, and you did not send that list. They then sent you a list of 20 questions which I needed answers of specific instances of overplanning, and you did not respond to those questions. So it's all well and good to say that you sent the COO a letter committing yourself to cooperate the investigation, but sir, you did not cooperate with the investigation. And that point is made very clear in the report. If you look at this claim on the 27th of March 2013, I'm not going to go to all of the claims. I've lost all of the disputed claims in here because the minister very kindly released it to me. But that's not the same. I would like to receive all of the claims that you mentioned that you were prepared to leave and that you very well could send them to the committee, and I appreciate your transparency in that regard. But let's look at the 27th of March 2013 when you claimed 7,000 rand for a 15-minute meeting. So I put it to you, how is that possibly justifiable? Now you say that you left your chambers at a certain time, you drove to the meeting and you drove all the way back. You must be the only person in the country that is allowed to claim for the time taken to drive to the office. No one else does that. But you've claimed 7,000 rand for a 15-minute meeting. There are many other examples. I don't want to go through individually. You claimed 75,000 rand for travel claims, many of which were on Sunday. But you said this is that you don't work on Sunday. The tribunal does not work on Sunday. You have 4 days worth, 28,000 rand, all for the same day, the 4th of June 2013. Now, how is it possible to do 4 days work and plan 4 days on the same day? I could answer, but I don't know how you can justify these claims. And then, frankly, I find the department's decision to close the investigation inexplicable. Inexplicable. So, that said, if you can understand how it's a little bit far-fetched for us to believe when you say you still have your integrity intact, I think quite the opposite. Your integrity stands greatly besmirched by this report. Now, you know, so the 20 questions that you didn't answer, maybe you can give us some of the context for how you can have 7,000 rand for the evening meeting today. Because you didn't answer that, but I put that question to you. Now, just respond to some of the things that you said and ask them follow-up questions. You said that, you know, this is all in public service. Well, thank you very much, but no one forced you to apply to be the chairperson of the company's tribunal, you volunteered to apply. So you can go and make more money outside of the company's tribunals in your practice. No one is asking you to do that, but all these teams go and do that. Now, I know that you're a very wealthy man, so that's on the public record. You claim 10 million rand in fees from the Cerisi Commission. So you're a very wealthy man, you don't need the money. So that's a contradiction to ask your argument. If you don't need the money, why do you fiddle the place? If you don't need the money, why did you apply to be this chairperson and then claim more than you were entitled? If it's truly a lifetime service for you, sir, please stick to the letter of the law and claim only for the minute that you work. Don't claim more than you're entitled to, because it really undermines your integrity, and it makes us question whether it really is about public service or whether it's about how lucrative the government work can be. To follow on from what the chairperson said, you are the chairperson of the tribunal. You are responsible for making sure that institutions and mechanisms of good governance are put in place at the tribunal. So I would really like to put all of these shortcomings to you. And the CEO has said here this morning that all of these things have been addressed. We don't know how they've been addressed. No details have been given to us. All of these 20 questions that they have put to you, what exactly have you done to make sure that this can never happen again? And the chair of the tribunal, it is your responsibility to put in place good governance mechanisms at the tribunal. So, those are my follow-up questions, but I don't agree with the responses you've given. I don't agree that your integrity is intact.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bill Lewis. There is no other follow-up, is that correct? Fine. If you would like to address some of those points, perhaps, related to that would probably be the issue of policy. And I think you, Lamello, made it clear that you were given the rate for the position was so much per day, not per hour, according to my understanding of it. The rate per day, whether the day was half an hour or 24 hours, as my understanding goes, number one. But number two, has the institution itself, and the company's tribunal, have you developed a policy around some of these issues? I mean, certain things have happened now, you've tripped over them. Have you taken measures to develop a policy that says X will happen and so on and so forth, or much? So as you answer that, now, it may be quite human to forget about what happens in a day, at least one keeps one of these particular diaries, but I think the response would be in order there along that way. But having said that, and I do want you to respond to this advocate, Lavello, I must say that we didn't request the initially per se a forensic report per se, but rather certain matters. Subsequently, the report was offered to us, and so on. The report came to us by Uncle Lewis, who had requested a stream of hire, or not him, but by Terry Pye subsequently, but the Honourable Mayor. And after that was done, we then received further information from the department. So if you would just conclude on those issues, and then I will wrap up at that point. And if, of course, the group's chief operating officer or the DG wants to make a final comment. Over to you, Bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Ms. Foster. I feel unfortunate that Mr. Lewis relies on some detail that's not telling me my facts. I have never received 20 questions from the forensic audit. I think I referred to my deputy chair, and I assure you that my deputy chair cooperated. All the questions that were put to me were answered. They never made a follow-up to me. All that they said to me, and I'm putting on record, is this: when we need you, we will call you. And I said to them, as long as I am not busy outside the company's tribunal with other commitments, I assure you that that's not true. I'm on record as follows. From when I arrived at the company's tribunal up until the end of last year, I've never taken training costs. I put it on record. My CFO is here, and I will give you my fish to that regard. And you know, Mr. Lewis, you must remember one thing when I'm giving you my fish. I always say, fish did want to find error in any world. But let us have to make response. The issue of my fish and the issue of finding out members' fish was not part of the assignment that was given to the forensic audit. They never even asked me a single question on my fish. They never even, the only question that they asked me was, what happened to petty cash? And I didn't understand what they meant. They have never asked me any question on my fees. I have never claimed just any relevant fees for the tribunal. It was in line with my integrity to demonstrate that I'm not there to make money. I'm unclear of, I think, was the end of last year. Now, let me tell you about the 50-minute story. I know where it comes from. It starts this way. You will see my style of my fees is to say, to put myself transparent. I denude myself. I tell what I did with whoever. If I met Miss Fox for that day, I start by saying, if today is the 21st of April, I will say, attending to the activities of the company's webinar, come on, meeting Miss Fox, meeting Miss Fox, meeting Miss Maslenia, meeting Miss Lewis, at the end, I came the token. Now, there's been an allegation that some of my colleagues were asked the following question. Why does the advocate Levala charge the whole day's fees? Where else do you not charge? Now, that aspect amazes me. In their own reasons why they do not charge. It doesn't mean that I didn't do an assignment with them, I didn't meet them. For instance, I know that Mr. Sally Gunther, who is the CA and a member of the tribunal, came to me and said, I'm surprised that I did not want to charge, but said, you met with me. I respect that. Sometimes there's no need for me to specify, and I don't have an obligation, honestly speaking, to tell you that I met you, I met anyone. I don't. I did it because I wanted to be transparent. I could have said, I'm taking the activities of the company's tribunal and shut my day's fee. For me, to leave my chamber, to be at the company's tribunal for 10 minutes, I often have to judge the whole day's fee, initially, before we adopted the policy. I think that clarifies it. The other aspect of your concern is that, Mr. Nicholas, unfortunately, I didn't claim 10 million rents from the Security Commission. In actual fact, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it's less than that, and it includes rent. At one time, I was every day at the Commission. And coincidentally, St. Louis, there were other colleagues who did private work, which has more. For instance, the Marigano Commission fees, at one time, were spending, as if I'm not mistaken, 30 million rents. The fees of the commission that was made by the GA government in the Western Cape. The other case there probably got 10 times more than my fees, but there are no investigations in that regard. I don't want to go there. Let's not go there. All I am saying is that it's not correct for you to say I charge 10 million less fees. That's not correct. And may the record reflect to educate you, there was a time when I was at the commission every day. Charging 5,000 rent a day, I leave it to you, having to work over weekends also. But let's not go there. And those fees were of more than a year, if I'm not mistaken, those two too. But let's not go there.
Anyway, thank you for being here with the team this morning. I'm just checking that the G Group Senior and Sons EDG, yes, Anna Scott.
Thank you, Chair. Just in response to Honourable Lewis, the minister for the department had taken, where in fact we had conducted a financial health check, internal audit reading. They looked at all of the allegations, issues around easy cash, claims, and they went and reviewed all of that. So that's one of the measures. Other measures include reinforcing the institution. There was no full-time person to look at the actual operations. Subsequent to the appointment of the full-time tribunal member, the key policy was really taken into consult with the NCT.
So the three policy masters, you can charge one day for preparation, one day for actual hearing, and day for having an attachment. There was that clarity at the onset when the TD had been established. They have implemented a number of internal policies that had to be at the time that the allegations were made. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you very much. Now, members, I am having this letter, which the DG sent to me the other day. It's either Friday or Monday, or what? 21st yesterday. And that is with respect to this matter. But I wanted you to be able to check the issues that you wanted to ask the presentation. We'll get the entire of the three-page letter, but it does indicate the issues that have already been referred to about the internal audit unit, which did deal with matters of health, looking at subsistence, travel claims, in other words, the PFMA issues, okay, and assisted the company, tribunal, and testing compliance, etc. Part of this, of course, is related to the young life of a company, tribunal. It's not, it's a very young company, not a company, but entity. And it isn't really even fully up to its full complement to deserve that. And we've heard why that is the case, that it will grow in time. The other issue is that several operational policies have been implemented recently, including a policy governing fees to be paid, etc. So even if it isn't a problem about fees, the big issue has to be, what is the policy? Is there a policy? The other thing refers to a parliamentary question which had been received, question 2815, and responded to as well. The next thing refers to the forensic inquiry, etc., which we are all very familiar with, and so on. But just to go back to the first page of the letter, it confirms the whistleblower issue, it looks at the rental of buildings, etc., and deputy chair and so on, certain challenges that may have arisen in that regard. And it goes on to look at the weaknesses, control, checks and balances that the Auditor General asked to be, you know, firmed up, made much more robust, as it were, and what measures have been put in place. So you will get this. In due course, you'll get the audit report, you know, as it arrives later, the final, because I think we all know the auditor sends a management report to the entity, DPI, and these are commented on because they're not always accurate or there's a difference of opinion. So you will get this, and what I think needs to be stated at this point very clearly, but I'm looking at the whip of the AFC who may wish to make a final comment in this regard. We looked at subsidy. There was a request when you actually tabled the report on Old Hill Lewis. Look, it is this issue, and I said it will be coming up, raise the issue. Now, I think we have raised the issue that did concern us. We did, in fact, receive a full report. But the question arises, and we need to unpack this as a committee. When we ask for reports, what are we asking for? What do we want to achieve? There are reports and reports and reports. Some of them are forensic. Some of them aren't. Some of them are just a regular report. Now, the reason I was just consulting the Constitution and various other things is always to see, you know, where our original source of authority comes from and what does it say. And in many ways, it leaves us quite open. That's okay, you must do this, you must do that. And I think it was really, when we developed the Constitution, it was hoping for 20 years along the line, we would have developed a certain element of maturity and committee to make a responsible position and take a decision thereof. When do we call for X and Y? I think at this point in time, we separated the two issues, sub-C, there are issues there. We separated the company tribunal. And certainly from what we heard this morning, perhaps you don't feel like clapping hands, but we can say we've received a satisfactory response. Okay, that's how I'm looking at it. However, I'm going to ask the two parties who are here this morning to give their final comments in this regard. Honourable Kalaku.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think you are correct. We are separating the two issues. Correct. But I think with the account which has been given here by the Chair, I think it gives us the complete picture of what exactly we wanted to know. Because so far we've just gone through the report or got the minister explaining to us. But what you are not going to help share is individual opinions. We might have our own opinions about issues. But I think that speaks for the fair. Also, I want to thank the chair for being so much ready to provide the information which was raised here. Otherwise, I don't think somebody would type something. Would do that. My conclusion, I think the other problem of this issue, chairperson, is that we sit in the commission. Some of the people they might want to get into you because of us. Because even the issue, the way it came to the committee, it came in another way. But I think that, as it may be, of course, it's their right of everybody to get and question those things openly. And you have actually given. I don't think, Chair, we need to waste time on the committee on this one. But we know we are having our outstanding other issues on the city. I think number one still to pursue this. They can pursue that on an individual basis or party to party basis. It's up to them. I don't think we can waste any more time on the part of the committee.
Thank you, Honourable Kalaku. I just want to correct my own comment earlier. I have recognised the Honourable Zeman when we were responding to this, but I think with your head down, I didn't see your head. We have three parties here with us this morning. One of the parties gave an apology to the Freedom Front, IP.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The way I was facing, I was in trains in hand. Unfortunately for me, I'm not regular on your committee, and I regret that I wasn't there when the matter was tabled. So I had it for the first time today, and I'm satisfied with the responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kimon, Honourable Phil Lewis.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Please thank you, Chairman, for the opportunity to raise issues in the committee. That's all we have asked for, an opportunity to question the company's tribunal on the matters contained in the report, and you've given us that opportunity. We will obviously continue to pursue the matter, but we can do that, as we see fit. I agree with you that the two matters must remain separate, that they're not related, and the, in many ways, the issues of the CIPC are all concerning. As to the issues, of course, I am not satisfied with the response. I think any reasonable South African would agree with me that charging 7,000 rand for a 15-minute meeting is unethical, even if it is not technically illegal. And that is just one example of the overcharging that has occurred at a significant scale in the company tribunal. I'll continue to make that point in various forums, and I think everyone, right-minded person would agree with that. And let me say, it is not the Sariti Commission that holds this matter to the committee. This matter is going to do with the Sariti Commission.
collaborated, because they may, I have noticed your hands on the more McPherson. So just to indicate that the companies can't be along, that our position now as a committee, we would like anything outstanding you would like to submit to the committee, be submitted to Mr. Andre Herman or Mr. Kendall Lima, who of course is officiating at this particular committee session. Our secretary, Pierre Cunningham, committee secretary, thank you very much. And I would like you to thank you for bringing the whole team. Yes, Anthony.
Madam Chair, with respect, actually, I feel it's to reconsider my position, my position. I am not handing my fees to Mr. Hindus, and I'll put it on record. I would like him to take this with him. I've got no obligation to give him the fees, and I'm on record as well as if anyone wants to find error in the fees, they will. I'm taken aback, and I'm certain that the issue of the allegations in the Security Commission will lie on deck also. The way this issue is raised lies on deck at the right time. And I appreciate it. Thank you.
Right. So thank you very much, and thank you to all members of the company's tribunal. I'd just like the Chief Operating Officer to remain and the DDG. Yes, I'm just like to introduce the name so we are still dealing with our issues. And I forgot to note earlier that we've got the Chief Director, Mr. Tom Moyer, as well as Ms. Nye. Thank you very much. Over to yourself, Honourable McPherson.
Thank you, Chair. I think once again you've seen a commitment made to do something and then withdrawn. And I think that's most unfortunate. And I think that obviously is coming to my attention that this is a hurdle and in which the way the gentleman operates, making commitments to do things and then withdrawing them at the last minute, which we could see anything to. But I want to bring to your attention and the committee's attention that Section 55 of the Constitution empowers us to hold the government and all orders of state in the national government accountable to Parliament and to maintain oversight of them. And that includes anybody who works in an organ of state, such as the company tribunal. My point to this is that I encourage my colleagues who sit on this side of the benches to remember that we took an oath that requires us to maintain oversight. And I don't believe what we've done today is oversight. I think that we've listened, perhaps it's my opinion, and Rule 44B of the Rules of Parliament allow me to do so. Rule 44 of the rules allow me to do freedom of speech and debate, which I'm going to do now. And I don't think that we're effectively doing it. And I think that what we've allowed ourselves to see today, we've been subjected to wishy-washy answers. We've been subjected to all manner of half truths and an inability to answer the questions put before us. And that is not in line with the Constitution and is not in line with our oath to the Republic of South Africa. And I want to encourage you here to ensure that even those that come to account to this committee that are responsible for organs of state do so in a truthful and respectful manner, that they are accountable to this committee and this parliament.
Thanks, yes. And I'm going to hear what two other members or three other members are saying, but you raise a very serious allegation. You are saying, actually, that people have come here and lied to the committee. Because I want you to explain what you mean by a half-truth, etc. There is no such thing as a half-truth. Are you half dead, dead or alive? What are you? No. Be very cautious and please do not quote Rule 44. This is not a debate. This is not a debate. So if you want to start to use this rule book, let's use it properly. You are correct in referring to the Constitution, and that is 55 and 56. Now, I want one thing clarify, what do you mean by a half truth? Because there is no such thing.
Chair, there's a rule 44, and let me read it to you, says that there shall be freedom of speech and debate in before the town and any committee thereon. Okay? So I am empowered to use rule 44 in this. Now, what I'm saying, Chairperson, is that we have a forensic report that the DA has obtained. There are very serious allegations in those reports. We have been given answers which we don't believe to be true.
But to be more important than their thoughts, Chairperson,
they are half true. Because criminal
reasons, I don't take points of order in the committee.
So therefore, Chairperson, in my opinion, the answers that have been given to us are not true. And that is the basis that I said that we must hold those answers in a council against the Constitution.
To have to do, because that is a serious allegation. It is a very serious allegation. It is a serious allegation which I do not agree with, Honourable Mcombe, Honourable Montage, Honourable Williams.
And we're not going to be doing things according to the avenues here. We're elected by the people to represent our own constituents. So they must look at us how to behave. That's the first thing that they must understand. Because his opinion, what is the position of the ANC on the matter? So if he thinks that this is not oversight, it's not oversight, we have done our oversight, so it's not satisfied with that oversight, then we must follow other issues. There are human beings that are not entering here. The steering commission things. What are they doing here? This is a trade industry meeting of the national affairs. So they must not, when they want to raise their issues, try to put the ANC as an organization that is defending an anti-position. There's nothing that the ANC has defended here. The ANC has done its own oversight. If the DA wants to pursue every time individuals and destroy black people in this country, it is not our agenda. So I'm going to support them on those things.
Thank you, Honourable Mcombe, Honourable Mantash.
Thank you, Chairperson. The allegation that they have never done oversight today, I must put it on record, that is not correct. But the DA is they have the right of opinion. And they not set up on our agenda. They have their own agenda. They have its own. We were worried when we have and spent so much time on matters that are not concerned in this committee. And hoping the future will not be withdrawn into things that do not concern our community. We are a majority party, can't be told by minorities what to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mantash. Honourable Mcombe, I'm going to ask you to desist from your lack of respect for your colleagues. First of all, in the middle of a meeting, you walk from the side right down while someone's speaking. That's not very respectful. Now, try to respect your colleagues. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think it should be made very clear that Honourable McPherson made it his own opinion. It's his own opinion, not the opinion of the majority of this committee. Further, to these questions, I think were asked and answered by the advocates. Also, they didn't appear on the agenda. So fundamentally, this committee did in fact ambush the advocates, which is a little bit unfair and also dishonourable in my opinion. And I think the questions were asked and they were answered to our satisfaction. And I think the matter is closed. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Williams. Now, I've given every party the opportunity to express an opinion. As Chairperson, the ruling that I'm making is that in the light of the comment, although there was a qualification of the comment, and that it was, in my opinion, I believe, and therefore we might qualify something along those lines, one has to take it as your position, in your opinion. But I just want to remind all members, we must be very, very cautious when we simply say X
from him. Because even here in Parliament, we need to be mindful of those things. We can, as you quite rightly said, Honourable Hill Lewis, yes, thank you very much for giving us the chance to engage on this in the committee. However, worse to that effect, I will continue to sue the worst to that effect. Can agree wants to do that. And I think that also shows respect within the committee and within the parliamentary structure as your colleague. It doesn't say for one moment to me as chair, you agree with everything. And I think I will take that clear. So there isn't a full agreement. The prof himself, the Honourable Dean has indicated he hasn't been fully abreast of activities here. However, from what he's heard this morning, he thanked and he means, yes, thank you very much, open, etc. That is the position on the basis of this morning. And I may say that, yes, what if you could carry, you know, sort of stretch it and say that it was an ambush, but the reality is the company's tribunal was here and they are here to account for allocation of resources they have received and how effectively they will use it. So in that extent it wasn't too much of an ambush per se. But I must say that we are, given your use as an entity, we are going to continue to track you carefully. Because I just said at the beginning, right when I opened up and thanked you, you have got a huge task. You are really a pioneer in this alternative resolution, concept resolution, and as a forum. And we hope that it is such a forum, such a tribunal, that we'll be able to take on more and more specialist issues from the regular courts, if I can put it that way, and resolve it in a more constructive manner. And that's why it's so much more important that the government's issues are very sound and robust within this entity. And that notwithstanding technology, etc., that the integrity of systems is in place. I think that's it. So that is who is there. It's going to stand the test of time. That's the point one wants to make as chair. So we will look at you again, probably round about August, September, when we tackle the annual reports, quarterly reports and the like. But we also thank all the members of the committee for bringing things to our attention. Now, there are things that we remain concerned about, that we expressed the concern earlier this morning. But let us continue to work together in a more collegiate manner and achieving accountability, because every entity must be accountable. And I know we laugh at the issue of rental of buildings, but subsequently the whole issue of buildings become a huge issue. And we all know that. You know, it may not have been the case 5 years ago, a year ago, 3 years ago, but we also burnt our fingers there by not making inquiries what the cost of this or that is. So as we grow and go along, we learn. So here, as you say, in the end it was just this and then it grew out. But let us learn from what has happened. And I'd like once again to thank you all for being here, the Group Chief Operating Officer, Ms. Goss, the DDG, the Lord Wayne too. Thank you for your time. And every member of GTI who's sitting here. We're seeing more and more of the in this hall, which is beautiful because you're speaking as institutional memory and value. I'd just like the committee members to remain 1 minute longer. The schedule has changed in effect from the teacher, the gathering. The reason for that is we agreed all along the line that the transfer of timing, we would join and link up with time at the end of doing what needed. As today they identified the looking for the earliest, I think he said the picture of marriage at last. Okay. You are the fool on the water route. That's what I think they were wrote again. Now we put it just a little bit further down on the 12th of May. I hope you are available on that particular day. But then
the processes and the issues that have arisen in such scene. Because the commissioner certainly it would appear, although I'm trying to see what I've heard officially on the matter, that I have heard officially verbally on the matter that the Minister of Defence in Indonesia has resigned. Some of you may be aware, Commissioner, at any event, this was, I think, her last year operation. I think I stand correction, but that was my opinion.
I think that's official.